All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to NLA's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 16th, 2015. Tonight's open forum is being simulcast over three networks now. We have a new radio program that's picking us up. They're going to be simulcasting us. And I believe they'll all be also replaying us through the week from time to time on their stations. You can find out more about these three radio stations by going to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on the Monday call, and you'll find that information down there, their websites. One of them is Shake and Wake Radio. We got GMN Broadcasting, and now we have Classic Redneck Radio, which I believe they started tonight. I did speak with Eric, who set this up. So William is supposed to be starting to pick us up tonight. We broadcast live every Monday, for those who will listen either on recording or radio. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. And if you're listening live over one of these three networks and you would like to speak by asking a question or making a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140, or 40, shall I say. 605-562-3140. The participation code is 385-696. Let me repeat that, 385-696. So it's 605-562-3140. Participation code 385-696. 696. Maybe if we can try to remember to repeat this maybe at least once an hour through the program, so people come in a little late if they want to try to chime in, we'll give them that information. Now, what I'm going to do right now, I don't want anyone to get into the queue. I'm going to open up for Q&A, and we only from Redneck Radio, if you hit star 6 and come into the queue, we'll unmute you. And let's see, and you can introduce. So before we get started, we'll let William come in and introduce Classic Redneck Radio, and then we'll take it from there. Let's see. William, are you out there? Hit star 6 if you are. Eric, if you're out there, maybe you can hit star 6. I know you were trying to get me while we started the program, but I couldn't answer the call because you would have went live over the air here. So, Eric, if there's some change in information, you can let me know. Okay, I don't see William coming in. Well, let me say, I see Eric coming in, so let me unmute Eric for a moment. Is William going to be on this week to announce his debut, so to speak, or are we going to do that next week?
Yes, no, I think William is with us. I'm just going to turn it back over to you. So if he's out there, William, you're going to hit star 6, and then Juan to get on the queue. So come on and introduce yourself if we have you. If not, we'll shoot for next week. So I'm just going to yield back over to you, John.
Okay. All right, while we're waiting for William to get into the question and answer, the Q&A there, I see that Pete has come in. Let me unmute Pete. Maybe Pete wanted to say something before we get started. I know he started simulcasting us last week, and maybe he might want to make some notes or an announcement. Go ahead, Pete. You're unmuted.
Yeah, I sure do. I just want to let, as we do on our network and on my show, GorillaMediaNetwork.com is where we're simulcasting. Last week was just out of the park, John. I just want to tell you that, and I want to tell all of our listeners here on Gorilla Media Network, we are simulcasting you. As a service to our listeners, I want to encourage, every single network out there in independent media needs to be broadcasting this thing, especially after what I heard last week. I want to welcome everyone to this call and take good notations. You're going to learn a lot from it, as I did last week. But thank you. And as I said, GMN here is honored to be broadcasting your show. So good luck to you. Thanks for joining us. And every single Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do it live.
We appreciate that, Pete. Okay, thank you. We got Rick from Shake and Wake Radio. Let's see. Go right ahead, Rick. Your mic should be open now if you want to say a few words before we get started concerning an introduction. You've been with us for a while. You've been actually simulcasting us for quite a few months now. But go ahead. Did you want to say something before we get started? Let me try. I see you're in twice, so maybe you one computer you can't talk in, so I'll unmute the other one, too. Go ahead.
I think that as many people
gotcha,
as possible need to go over to NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and we need as many radio stations broadcasting this Monday night call as possible, because I've known you a long time, and I believe this is our last chance to take back this country lawfully. So, kick ass, and God bless everybody. And
appreciate it.
And God bless everybody.
We are still running the Bible study on Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Rick is going to be live on that one in that program. He's the one who asked me to do the study, so we're actually doing it for him, but we're broadcasting it to our room, so people are welcome to come to it.
Yeah, the last couple weeks we've both been sick, so.
Oh, yeah, sick as a dog. Matter of fact, this past week, I'm feeling a lot better, but I'm still exhausted, and I fell asleep, and I just didn't wake up till an hour and a half in, and I said, well, okay,
I guess
not doing it this week either.
That's
so,
right. We'll do it.
But we will pick up
next Saturday for those who are interested.
ShakeAndWakeRadio.com,
and anybody... The chat room's packed again. You know, anybody who'd like to join us here at ShakeAndWakeRadio.com, you can join us in the chat. And God bless John and all the great people involved in this. I really believe this is our last chance. It really is. I mean, we don't want to go violent or have to take back our country with some civil war type situation. So I really believe in what this man is doing. God bless you all, and
well,
have a great...
it's not just me. There's quite a few of us here, and to God be the glory. So, but I appreciate it, Rick. Okay, let's see. William, are you here? Let me go back. I see Eric is still in the queue, so let me unmute Eric. And Eric, have you heard from William? Is he connected in yet with us? If not...
He's on. Can you hear me, John?
Yeah, tell him how to get into the queue. I think it's star 6, and then...
I did. He said he hit it, and it's not letting him in. So he's with us, and he's trying. I just had him on the other line twice, so we're just having a few technical difficulties with him entering the queue. I know I almost didn't get in the conference call tonight, dialing the 605 number 11 or 12 times. It wouldn't let me on. It said not working number, blah, blah, blah. So we may be under a little bit of sabotage now that we're really rocking and rolling here with three radio stations simulcasting. So hang in there, folks. We have ClassicRedneckRadio.com on the way. We're just going to overcome this last little hump.
What's he coming in as, Eric?
He's coming in as anonymous or unavailable, so you need to look for that.
All right, see if you can find him, Gerard. Okay, we appreciate that, Eric. And, yeah, you know, one of the things, we have numerous ways to dial into our program. If you go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, and if you click on the Monday night or the weekly call up on the top left side right above the blue bar, you'll get the instructions. You can call in with the number that we gave out. There is also a backup number because sometimes, you know, we're coming in on kind of prime time, 9 o'clock. There's a lot of activity just on the phones as it is. That becomes a problem. HD also goes heavy at that time period. And so because of that, there may be problems dialing in. But there is a backup number for when you're having a problem. You can use the other number. And it's a different number, but then when you call in, they'll ask you for the number that you usually call in, and then they'll still ask you for your user code to get to the proper room, which, of course, is our room and LA's room. We also, anybody who wants to come in on their computer can come right in on their Internet browser. It works with any Internet browser. You just click on the phone right on the top of our page. You'll see there right under the weekly live schedule, you'll see a little green phone. Just click on that phone. A dialer will come up. You do a drop-down box. Click on the number that you're supposed to have dialed in on, and it'll dial in. And then you put your code in, just as if you were calling in on a phone, and you will hear everything going on here in this room right over your speakers on your computer, and if you have a mic, you will be able to talk. So you don't need
John, one correction I have to throw in. You said that the code was 696. It's 385698, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
you
yes.
may have left
as
your wrong,
mistake,
so just correct yourself on that.
Yeah, let me change that on my thing here. Absolutely, I appreciate that. It's 698 for anybody who got that wrong. So let me repeat that number, 605-562-3140, participation code 385-698. Okay, so anyway, there are other ways that we can get into the call. Did we find William yet?
I don't think so. Do you see any anonymous or unavailable? Because that's what his system will be reading as.
We have a couple of them, but they're not him. I know who they are, the ones that I see. I don't see him yet, though.
Okay.
But I haven't been to everybody.
We're working on it.
All right, well, we can try to look for him again. Let me do this. We'll try to look for him again after we go through our few things that we have to share. We'll try to give him a few minutes.
Don, can you bring him in through your personal line, or does it have to be through the conference call?
Oh, yeah, he can call me in on my personal line. We'll let him in that way. Have him call it 845-233 number. So call him
I'm going to call him right now and have him try you at that number then.
All right, while he's doing that, just to bring everybody up to speed on how we're setting things up, you know, I don't know how the radio stations, they may be picking us up at 9 p.m. exactly and running right up to the last, right up to 11:55 is when we close down. But we're leading in with a song, usually a four-minute song, and we're going to lead out with a song, usually a four-minute song. So that'll bring us to the full 3 hours, but we get about 4 or 5 minutes in the beginning, 4 or 5 minutes in the end. I did that mostly just in case these radio programs wanted to do some kind of a special station identification or an announcement or whatever it is that they want to do for the first 4 or 5 minutes, and the same thing on the way out to keep it within a three-hour range for their normal programming. Maybe they'll listen in live and use our music. Maybe they'll pre-record us later on their programs, and they might want to stick some identification in there, however they want to do it. But anyway, that's the reason why we're doing the songs. I'm choosing very specific songs. Well, we are. I know I chose the songs for last week and this week, and I've been looking a lot at Alan Parsons' projects for playing those songs, because I think it has a lot to do with us as a people and who we are and where our hearts and mindset should be. And but there are other artists I'll be bringing in and playing, and we have been posting the lyrics for edification. You will find the lyrics of these two songs, the lead-in and the lead-out song. You will find that at nationallibertyalliance.org. Top left side, click on Weekly Call, and on that page you'll get that information. So you get the information on the radio programs that are broadcasting us. You'll get information on how to call in numerous ways, what the codes are, and also the lyrics for the week, and there's some other information, I'm sure, on the page. I just can't think of it at the moment. Now, I see someone calling in on 0350. Is that you, William? Let me unmute you for a second. Is that you, William?
No, it is not.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look for William and see if we can get him. I'm going to clear the queue for right now. If William can figure out to get into the queue, fine. I'll see him in the queue. If not, he can try calling me. I'll pull him on the line, and we'll get moving in with our program. We'll fit him in to introduce himself and his radio network. We'll give him a few minutes to talk. Now, again, we're not going to repeat this every week. I just want to give the opportunity of these people who are simulcasting us. Matter of fact, maybe we'll give them a minute every week just to give us whatever they want to say in the beginning of the program like we're doing. I mean, that may be appropriate. And, of course, we'll mention their names as far as their radio programs, and they can mention whatever else they want to mention. Okay, let's move on with our programming here. Let me just make a few other announcements before we actually get going. Next week, we will be welcoming a new sponsor, New Manor. It's a delicious non-GMO long-term storage food, and the proceeds from that.
How you doing, William? Hold on one second. Yes, sir.
Mute me. Okay, yeah, that's good. The proceeds from that will be going to National Liberty Alliance. We're looking for different ways to try to support National Liberty Alliance. We need money. Money makes the world go around. We have to pay bills. And believe me, we got a lot of them. And a lot of our programs with the mailings and so on, it's really going to start to pile up this coming month. But in any event, anybody who can give $5 a month or more as a donation, really appreciate it, really need it. You know, all those people that are taking, we got like 400 or 500 people taking the course, a civics course, and a lot of those people, maybe they can give $5 a month. They're getting a free course, but you're getting a tremendous amount of information on our website, and we really do need the assistance. But anyway, I was approached by New Manor a while back, and we've worked out an arrangement. As a matter of fact, I also was introduced to these people by William, the individual who's going to be speaking in a minute or two, with Redneck Radio, Classic Redneck Radio. And they got a really great product, I think, it's appropriate for what we're doing. We're not going to just sell anything here to try to make any money or anything, but things that are appropriate for the movement. I mean, obviously, food. Anybody who realizes the problem needs to understand they need to be storing food, and so this is a great product. It really tastes good. We did get some samples, and we thought it was good. They're sending out some more samples to us, and on a few other things. But we're really happy with the product, and it's going to assist us, National Liberty Alliance. All the proceeds will be going to National Liberty Alliance. So we don't have the icon up on our website yet. It will be up on the website. We'll talk about it again next week, but you'll find it eventually. It'll be on the right side, on the right column there. You'll see a banner there for New Manor non-GMO long-term storage foods. Okay, let me introduce William. He's with Classic Redneck Radio. He's starting for the first time tonight to pick us up, and he's simulcasting us. William, tell us something about your radio or whatever you want to say. Radio program.
Yes, thank you, John, very much, and thank Gerard also, and all of you who are helping and working together to defend what is just and right and true, and we appreciate you all. I've been broadcasting for about 25 years. I'm an inventor, and I discovered something very interesting, and that was the true honorable meaning of the word redneck. And we hail on many AM/FM stations in America, as well as shortwave, and of course internet and all that sort of thing. And we're growing rapidly, very fast pace right now. I wanted to share with you the meaning of the word redneck and its historical meaning. And it goes back to the 1600s, just a short presentation here, and we'll be through it very quickly. The word redneck is absolutely honorable. And who were the first rednecks? And they weren't the guys with wheels underneath their houses or guys with mullets or guys who got sunburn on the back of their necks in the fields of the southern part of America. In the 1600s, the men of England, Ireland, and Scotland were reaching their threshold of disgust with a sinful, tyrannical government led by a nasty Vatican. As this commandment-breaking monarchy tightened the noose around their necks, these brave peasants long for the freedom Christ had given them to be sovereign kings of their lives and households. These God-fearing men from the hills understood the evil was beyond their human ability to fight. So they cried out to the Almighty and together in 1638 declared a written national covenant before God and themselves, declaring that the laws of God and not man should rule their lives. They signed their names in their own blood and wrapped red strips of cloth around their necks, just like the American banner has the red stripes. Around these rednecks, they were called, these English, Irish, and Scottish redneck freedom fighters, they were victorious because the Almighty did fight for them. And these redneck freedom fighters and their families migrated to America, John. And today they are remembered as the Billy Boys, the Hillbillies, the Covenanteers. They formed the Southern Bible Belt and brought their bluegrass and Celtic music with them. So that's what we're talking about. Excuse me for that line dropping right there, John. I apologize for that. Are you there, John?
Yeah, we're still here. I was muted.
Okay, good. Thank you, sir. So anyway, I encourage everyone to continue with National Liberty Alliance. And we certainly are doing everything we can to support the effort of all of you out there. And we are establishing an independent news network as well that we hope in the future that the National Liberty Alliance participants can become a part of and strengthen us as our own media in the future. So thank you, John, for this opportunity to bring support to what you're doing.
Okay, thank you, William. Appreciate all that you had to say there, and welcome aboard to get the message of liberty out. You know, we really need the people to get involved now. Now is the time to step up, and let's save America. And we have a very well thought out, researched plan, and that we are putting in effect, and we're right in the middle of it. Do you want me to drop you off my line, William? Let me drop you off here. You're listening in on the other line anyway, right? William?
Yes, that's fine. That is fine.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'll drop you off here. Okay. All right. Let's move on. We usually start off with some Bible verses. Let's go to God's Word. And we're going to read out of the book of James again. We're still in chapter 1. I'm going to read the second part of chapter 1, verses 19 through 27. And I was looking to see how we'd put this in order. Next week, we're going to put God's Word up front after the identification and time of who we are. We're going to do the Bible verses, and then we'll talk about all the other business that we've already talked about. So let's go with God's Word in James chapter 2, verses 19. Wherefore, my brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness. That superfluity means excess, all excess of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. But be ye a doer of the word, and not a hearer only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and that is God's word, whosoever looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. If any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is in vain. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the word. From the world. Okay, that was James chapter 1, verses 19 through 27. And next week we'll have some other verses. Okay, let's move on with our program for the night. Let's see where we're at. Last week we talked a bit about the sheriffs, particularly the sheriffs in the state of Connecticut. I've gone out and done some research, and we have updated our papers accordingly to reflect that research. I apologize for when we wrote these papers on that particular thing on the Connecticut. I did get some information off the Internet, and I talked to some people, and I thought it was pretty cut and dry. And it is kind of cut and dry anyway, but I probably should have done a little more research. So I apologize for that, but we did correct it, and we'll be a lot more careful the next time that we don't make this kind of an error again. You know, one of the problems out there is people don't do research. One of the problems out there is a lot of poison. People are just, you know, partaking in this poison and bringing it back out and delivering it to others. And we're just poisoning ourselves with things that are not true. And particularly in the liberty movement, there's a lot of information put out there purposely to really trip us up to begin with. But a lot of people that really are just taking the ride of getting some kind of notoriety, becoming some kind of a leader and getting a bunch of people following them. There's a lot of power in that. A lot of people, it feeds people's egos, and we want to be very careful that we don't get lost in that kind of thing. We're here with the duty and a sense of a duty, of course, to try to return back to the Republic, to bring us back to what our founding fathers originally designed for us and what they have founded, really. This is, liberty was founded. It was not created. Nobody really came up with the idea. It was founded. And ultimately, it was founded on God's word. You know, there are a lot of people out there doing a lot of things, and there's just a lot of bad information. We research everything we do, and if you read our papers, we pack them in normally with lots and lots of footnotes. We do a lot of quotes, United States Supreme Court quotes. We do a Founding Fathers quotes. We put out the law, but we put our research, we put our footnotes, everything, we back everything up. We don't want people to misinterpret any of the words, and that's why we put footnotes. This is what we mean when we say person or people. We don't mean what maybe the fiction means. And so we try to be very careful with that, but we're also not going to give in to the enemy and give them our language. They have robbed our language. They've turned the word person, which I think we spoke a little bit about that last week. I went into Black's Law and didn't find anything towards the natural being on the third edition. I had to go back to the first edition of Black's Law to find the natural person versus the corporate person. Between the first and the third, they erased it. It was already expunged, and person was just right up to the corporate. So they're taking our words, they're making them mean something else. We think we're saying one thing. They're making us say words that they think is magical. The whole thing is a fraud. It's illegal. These people belong in jail, and that's the bottom line. We can't give them any reality. We can't acknowledge them in any way because that would be wrong. So we're just going to tell the truth the way it is and move forward. But let's go back to the corrections that we made. The first correction, which was a simple correction. Well, I think before we do that, let's look at the marshal, the federal marshal. I think we brought him up last week. I don't think we got into big discussion with him. And we did add some new information on the federal marshal in our paperwork on the mandamus to the sheriff. And we did post this new paper. It is up on nationallibertyalliance.org. And if you go up there and you click on media and you'll click on the sheriff's mandamus, You'll get a copy. That was posted earlier today. We made two corrections in this. One we corrected and reposted, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and last one today. I think we got everything corrected in here now. We added on the Marshall. We did not have all this on the Marshall. So I'd like to read this insert. It starts on line 170 of page 5 of 8. It was a 7-page paper. Now it's an 8-page paper. We added about 4 or 5 paragraphs, and what you need to understand about the Marshall, and we're going to read about this, is that the Marshall was created very, very carefully, exactly as a sheriff. Has all the authority. His purpose is to protect and to serve the people and to protect the Constitution. He is to obey and apply the law, which means if this individual he has to obey the court orders. Which we're going to read about that stuff a little bit. But he has to obey his necessary duties as a court officer, and he has to execute anything that he is ordered to do. But it must be lawful. And herein is the problem. Marshals and sheriffs don't know the difference between something that is lawful and something that they claim to be legal, which is really fiction. Okay? They don't know the difference, and they're as dumbed down as we are, of course. They started off. They never were taught. They were never showed, hey, you're here to protect the Constitution. Nobody ever tells them that. That's their sole duty, is to protect the Constitution. The sheriff, particularly, which, again, you're going to see, you can't really separate the two, and it's very interesting the way they put this information into the Constitution, and then how that in the Judicial Act, a couple of good things came out of the Judicial Act of 1789, but of course the enemy was there too. But lay aside that for the moment. What they did with the marshal was excellent, and then the Marbury versus Madison of 1803, I believe it was, came out with a decision, and in that decision talked about the marshal and made it clear that marshal cannot be removed from office. And that's a very important point, because you see, the sheriff cannot be removed from office except for under bad behavior. Anyone could be removed for bad behavior. He's an elected individual. He's not politically controlled. He's not appointed by anyone. It's the people who elected him themselves directly. And so only the people can remove the sheriff from office for bad behavior. And if you go look up bad behavior, it is really doing things under the color of law that is not lawful. That's what bad behavior is as far as an elected individual is concerned. Sheriffs need to know that the governor cannot remove them from office. Here in New York, we had our governor threaten the sheriffs that he was going to remove them from office. He doesn't have the power or the authority to remove anybody from office. He can't do that. He would have to say, hey, he's committing a crime, report it to the grand jury, and the grand jury would have to indict. That's the only way it could happen. And that, of course, is not going to happen in all likelihood. So anyway, the sheriff is to enforce the Constitution, the law. He's not a code enforcement officer. He's a law enforcement officer. And when he's out in the streets and he sees an officer, some code enforcement officer that is violating someone's unalienable rights, it is his duty to stop it. Now, they don't know that. But that's what we need to teach them. They need to understand that, not by what we have to say, but what our founding fathers had to say, what the United States Supreme Court had to say. This is where, and what the law says. This is what we need to show them. And that's why we wrote the book and put out the Common Law Grand Jury, the Jurist Book, which is for sheriffs, bailiffs, judges, and jurists, in order to lay this out and make it pretty simple. So anyway, the second job that this sheriff has is, of course, is a court officer, which means he is on alert to make sure nobody in that court is breaking or violating anyone's unalienable rights. And when he sees a judge violate someone's unalienable rights and he recognizes it, he has a duty to get up and tell that judge to turn around, put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. That's what he should be doing. That person for violation is facing 2 to 4 years. It depends on what violation is involved here, but that judge is facing something up to 4 years. It could be actually up to 20, but we'll have to look into specifics. I forget what applies to what crime. But anyway, that is what he should be doing. The sheriff should also, he's the jailer. So you see, he's the bailiff, he's the jailer. and he is the constitutional officer of the peace. He is the protector of the peace. And again, we'll talk on that. We're going to talk about the marshal. You're going to think I'm talking about the sheriff, because that's how the Constitution designed it. Now, the interesting thing about the marshal, and I've been under an illusion, and I started researching this, and I found this in Marbury versus Madison. And I've been under the illusion that if an individual appointed someone, that individual can remove them from office. I got that from TV, watching TV movies, okay? I remember one movie particular, I don't remember the name, but I remember the guy coming in, he's all angry and stuff, and he says, "You, I can't do anything about, but you, I appointed you, I put you in, I could take you out, and you're out." So I believe that that was the truth. Well, Marbury versus Madison says no, not at all. The power of appointment, particularly by the president, and this should be the case with all appointments, but we'd have to look in each constitution separately to see how they might have screwed that up, because, of course, they don't want to lose that power and authority to be able to get rid of these people if they wanted to. But let's look at the Constitution, the United States Constitution. We're going to look a little bit at that when we read through the marshals. But the bottom line is the finale of Madison, Marbury versus Madison concerning this issue is that once the president finalizes his decision to appoint someone into the position in the office of marshal, which is then approved by the Senate, it must be approved by popular vote by the Senate. Once that's completed, Marbury versus Madison said, His whole power and authority concerning that individual ends. He cannot now get rid of that officer. That officer is now an officer of the law. He is bound by the law. He is to execute and exercise the law. And the only way he can be removed from office is if he violates that law under the color of law, and the people then can indict him or pull him from office. And that's it. That's the only way. And that's a very important thing to do, to understand. Now, I will tell you, you know, we spoke about this, I think, in the past, and we'll be speaking about this in the future for sure. The Judicial Act of 1789 was really violated a lot of the Constitution. And Marbury versus Madison put a correction to this stuff. And clearly, at that time, it wasn't until 2 or 3 years later, it was 89, it was 92, I think, when the Bill of Rights was ratified. And once that was ratified, it really took control of all those problems concerning the Judiciary Act of 1789. And also Marbury Madison actually put it to bed. Okay, but they're still acting upon it, because we're dumbed down and we don't remember it, because it's out of our memory. It's out of the memory of society. We just don't have it. We need to bring it back into our memory and come to the realize they can't do that. A fiction is fiction. Reality is reality. Fraud is fraud. It's a fraud when it was created. I don't care if it was created 200 years ago because it's in place for 200 years, no longer a fraud. Nope, it's still a fraud. It's still a crime. It's still immoral. It's still a wrongdoing. And people who are executing and exercising it should be in jail. And we'll educate them and give them that opportunity to make the correction. But if they refuse. Okay, line 170 on page 5 of 8. We're going to read about 5 or so paragraphs. The U.S. Marshal. The power, authority, and duty of a U.S. Marshal is similar to that of the county sheriff, in that he is a constitutional officer, having the power and authority to arrest judges that violate the unalienable rights of the people. One marshal is appointed for each of the 94 federal districts. So there are 94 marshals in the United States. He's appointed by the president. The marshal's powers are defined by the constitutional authority under the Judiciary Act of 1789. He serves for a term of 4 years. He takes an oath of office and has the power to appoint deputies and shall produce a bond. Now, one of the games they played in the Judiciary Act of 1789 is they gave the judge the ability to remove a deputy. They didn't dare make the move to try to say that about the marshal, but they did it with his deputy. And, you know, all logic of everything we're going to read here tonight and everything that I know, they don't have the power or the authority. Look at the whoever appointed that individual, that's the person responsible. And if they're breaking the law or the judge thinks they're doing something, they need to go to their boss, which would be the marshal in the case of the feds. And the marshal would say, "Hey, no, judge, you're wrong. I'm right behind him 100%. stick it in your ear. Or he may say, you know, you're absolutely right. I apologize for that. I'm going to take care of that right away, whatever the case may be. But it is the duty and the authority of the marshal to take care of his deputies, not the judge or anyone else. Now, they tried to sneak that one in. There is no place in the Constitution where that authority has been given. Since we, the people, didn't give them the authority, they don't have it. That's the bottom line. And that we have to start thinking free and take these things to the extent. Once you start reading these cases and you look at the Constitution, you start to see how to really look at freedom and how to really look at liberty and really understand how these things work. But anyway, it's the same thing with the sheriff. You know, the sheriff appoints his deputies. He's responsible for hiring and firing his deputies. They work for him. He's the extension of his arm. And so he can get rid of them and he can keep them, but nobody can fire them. We the people can fire anyone, though. Let's get that right. We have the authority to fire anyone, including a deputy, without even going through the sheriff. But it probably would be appropriate for the grand jury to get a hold of the sheriff to let him know that he's got a deputy out of control and we're going to do something about it. And we'll talk with him. That's probably the best way to go about it. But we're going to deal with him once the people get back into their authoritative seat again. Okay. His duties, like the sheriff, are to attend the district and circuit courts, execute throughout the district all lawful precepts directed to him, deliver writs, summons jurors, secure an impartial trial, execute warrants, and is responsible for retaining, delivering, and transporting prisoners in his custody as directed by the courts. Now, let's go back here. His job is to summons jurors. I'm starting to realize that in numerous places, you can go into Lysander Spooner, the trial by jury, and you'll read about it there. And it is the sheriff who calls the jurors, not the prosecutor. Prosecutor has no power, authority, per se, to call the sheriff. They can do it, but it's not normally their job. Okay? Who is responsible for who's in jail? That's the sheriff. The sheriff gets someone by the collar that's going into jail. It's his duty and responsibility to get to the grand jury as soon as possible to get that indictment, potentially, if he can, so that he can lawfully hold them. And I would agree that in any kind of a situation that is concerning, particularly violence, that the person should be held at least. But the sheriff should be able to get to any jury within 72 hours. At any given time, he should easily be able to get to a grand jury. And so they shouldn't have to hold someone any longer than 72 hours, especially if it's a violent thing. But my goodness, most of these other cases that aren't violent or anything, people are established in society. Look, they can wait till they get the indictment before going out and making the arrest on that individual. We have to work that out as a people, and we have to think about these things. We have to learn to be free and think free and not become extremists ourselves. We have to realize that we could be in error in certain areas, and we have to look for truth everywhere. Let's go back here. But the key thing here is that the sheriff summonses the jurors. So we, the people, need to administrate that process. We need to orientate the jurors to make sure that there's always jurists available at any given time. Generally speaking, I think, and we're going to talk about this later, we don't need to get into too much detail on this, but I'll just bring it up real quickly. Generally, a grand jury should come into power for maybe 30 days at the most. It depends on how much business is going on and how many grand juries are sitting at the same time. New York City, there'd probably be a couple at the same time. A place like where I live in Dutchess County, there might be one grand jury. And maybe we might see, well, okay, we call a grand jury, and they're on duty for a month, but they're only going to serve maybe 5 days. They're not going to serve 30 days. We just don't know what days. We get calls for the grand jury, and we'll start piling up cases. And all of a sudden, we'll get a call from the sheriff. They got someone that's violent, and they don't want to let him go. They need to hear right away. We call the jury in. They deal with that case, and then they deal with the other cases. And they may do that maybe 5 days out of the month, and then you change the jury. You go back to the pool, and you get 25 new people. That's the process, okay? And for those people who don't understand what we're doing, we are building administrations for the common law grand jury, four administrators for every county in America, where we would be responsible to be the investigative body for the grand jury. We would be the conduit, the in-between, the filter between the sheriff and anybody else who needs to call. And anybody can call a grand jury. Someone can say, I want to go talk to the grand jury. Well, we'll say, okay, we got them planned up the meeting on the 5th. You know, if you want to come in, you can come in the afternoon. We could probably fit you in if you want to come in around 1 o'clock. And let them come in, and we'll go, you know, how much time you're going to need. You discuss that with them, make sure it's not too long, and let them get their case or their point to the jury. Nobody should be refused to talk to the grand jury. Everyone should have access to that at any given time. And so the same thing with the prosecutor. The prosecutor finds something going on and they want to, have someone indicted. They can call us up and we'll set some time and let them come in and talk to the grand jury and we'll watch them like a hawk. But we'll let the prosecutor talk to the grand jury and then the grand jury will make their decisions on what they think should be done. Our job is to administrate to the grand jury, to prepare them for the job, to let them know that they need to act in a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and every decision that they make. And we get 1 day with them, 8 hours to orientate them. And in 8 hours, we'll show some videos and we'll have some discussions. We'll talk about common law. We'll bring up the specifics, the two great maxims. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. For every injury, there must be a remedy. Those are two very most important maxims of common law. And that every decision made has to be considered with honor, justice, and even mercy. No matter how heinous the crime, no matter how ugly the person, I want to put this guy away. All right, these guys, you've got to kill them. You've got to give them the death penalty. Well, nevertheless, when you come to the bottom line, before you make that decision, you must still consider mercy. Is there any place in here for any kind of mercy? Well, nope, there is, or isn't. Okay, you move forward. But it must be considered because it's the right thing to do. This way we don't get carried away with emotions. All right, well, anyway, we're going to get into those kind of things later on. Let's get back to the marshal. Once a marshal is appointed, he can only be removed from office by the people, that is the grand jury alone, and only for bad behavior. And this is Marbury versus Madison. The power of appointing the person nominated are political powers to be exercised by the president according to his discretion. When he has made an appointment, he has exercised the whole power, and his discretion has been completely applied to the case. The appointment cannot be annihilated. And consequently, if the officer is by law not removable at the will of the president, the rights he has acquired are protected by the law. So you see, it's very important that we realize that appointments by the presidents cannot be undone. When he appoints a judge, he can't say, I don't like this judge. You know, he's not really ruling the way I want. He cannot appoint him. He cannot annihilate that office. Same thing with the marshal. This is a very important thing. I'm sure, you know, and when they designed the marshal, there's no doubt they studied the sheriff to come up with the marshal. There's no doubt about it. When you read through this stuff, it's like looking in a mirror from the marshal to the sheriff. Now, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't realize that, but I know it now. And this is a very important information and knowledge to have. It's empowering, and it should be empowering to marshals. It should be empowering to sheriffs. Okay, marshals take an oath of office, swearing to faithfully execute all lawful precepts. Thereby, he must execute all lawful orders of the court. Key word here is lawful. Marshals are constitutional judicial officers, and therefore, like the sheriff, is to execute only the law of the land and protect due process. That's his job. Those are the two major focuses. You know, when you get stopped by a code enforcement officer, that is a town cop or a city cop or town or village cop, you get stopped by one of those guys. They are eyeing you up. They've been trained to look for code violations. Oh, okay, you didn't have a seatbelt on. You know, I noticed there that the blinker wasn't working. And by the way, where's your license? This is expired here. And where's your insurance card? You see, they're looking for code violations. That's what they're trained to do. They're not thinking about the Constitution at all. It doesn't even come to their mind. Even though they raise their hand, it doesn't come to their mind. Okay? But the marshal, okay, but these marshal and the sheriff, okay, they are to be looking at two things, and two things only. They're looking to make sure that only the law of the land is being executed, none of this fiction stuff, and also protect due process, make sure that nobody's being violated. If you're being violated, it's your Fifth Amendment, your due process rights is being violated by that judge. And that's what the sheriff and the marshal needs to understand and be able to recognize. Once we empower those people with that power, we can then easily take back America. And that's what we're trying to do, is to educate the marshals and the sheriffs, become their friends, to let them know we're not their enemies. Go read our stuff. See what we're talking about. We're empowering you guys. We're enforcing the law. We want you to enforce the law. Okay. Law of the land and protect due process. Let me just step back to the beginning of the sentence. Sheriff is to execute only the law of the land and protect due process. Failure to do so puts them in bad behavior, and therefore can be removed from office by the people, quote-unquote grand jury. Marshals, like sheriffs, are the guardians of the Constitution, thereby duty-bound to protect the due process of anyone standing before the court as much as they are bound to execute all the lawful orders of the court. Due process requires a presentment or an indictment by an impartial grand jury for all criminal cases. Prosecutions against double jeopardy, nor shall the accused be compelled to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without that due process. When someone is delivered up to the jail by some code enforcement officer, where is the grand jury indictment? Oh, you didn't get one? You got to let this guy go. You see, that's the law. Sheriff shouldn't be taking people into custody that they know due process. Once they know due process has not been applied to that person, they got to let them go. Otherwise, they get into bad behavior. They don't understand that. They don't know that. We, the people, don't really know that. We're knowing it now. We're learning now. That's why education is so important. That's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, is to facilitate that education. Therefore, judges get to decide if the law is just Therefore, juries get to decide if the law is just or should be applied concerning the case at hand, and any interference with that jury's prerogative is jury tampering, and thereby a denial of due process. Once that judge starts talking to that jury in that court and trying to convince them towards any statute, the sheriff should get up and say, can you turn around, put your hands behind your back? You're under arrest. And let them know why. Read him his rights. Take him down to the jail. For jury tampering, and thereby a denial of due process, if a judge or a prosecutor addresses the jury to persuade in the law, the jury is no longer impartial, and that judge or prosecutor is guilty of jury tampering. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to John Cartwright, June 5, 1824. The constitutions of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executive and legislative, and deciding by a jury themselves both facts and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. Or they may ask by representatives, freely and equally chosen, that is their right and duty to be at all times armed to freedom of person, freedom of religion, and freedom of property, and freedom of the press. We are always to be armed in those things. Nullification of law, a series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by the legislature of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the alien and sedition laws, declaring their illegality, announcing the strict constitutionalist theory of the federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy, Kentucky resolutions. Okay, so that concludes what we added into our paperwork for the marshals. Now, let's quickly go to the correction that had to be made here concerning the Connecticut sheriffs. And this is on the last page, page 8. It is now on line 267. And it says special consideration. We didn't have to change too much here. Connecticut Constitution, Article 4, Section 25. We were missing Connecticut Constitution, Article 4. So now we corrected that. It's Article 4, Section 25. At least that was in the past. Required the election of a sheriff every 4 years. Legislators, by an act and referendum, had no lawful authority to abolish the sheriff, the only constitutional officer. And we're going to talk about that for a few minutes. let's look at the unconstitutional act that was executed by the Connecticut legislators, and they should have known better. The word referendum, it's according to Black's Law, and this is been brought up in the case of Whitmore versus Carr. Right reserved to the people to adopt or reject any act or measure which has been passed by the legislative body and which, in most cases, would, without action on the part of the electors, become law. Now, let's go back and read this a little more carefully. It says here, they have the ability to reserve to the people to adopt or reject any act or measure which has been passed by a legislative body. Okay, the legislative body. The Constitution was not passed by the legislative body. The Constitution was passed by we, the people. It is true, most of those people became representatives, but nevertheless, that's the case. A constitutional convention requires only people who are not elected to office to attend. If you're a lawyer, a judge, if you're an elected individual to any, if you're a legislator, you can't go to a constitutional convention. Only people can go. And in most cases, would, without action on the part of the electors, become law. I'm not too sure I had to even understand that part, but that's pretty scary to me. Now, Connecticut Constitution, 4th Article, Section 25, said that sheriffs shall be elected in the several counties. Now, here's what Public Act number 0099 did, an act of reforming the sheriff system, 4B. The judicial department shall employ judicial marshals for prisoner custody and transportation responsibilities pursuant to this section. The chief court administrator may establish employment standards. Did you hear that? The marshal is employed. They could be hired. They could be fired. Keep in line. Don't bring up that constitutional stuff. Just stay in line, buddy, Mr. Marshal. You see the danger here? He cannot serve the Constitution. Therefore, right alone, that's it. It's a violation of unalienable rights of the people to have a peace officer that represents them. He is the guy that controls the court, makes sure it was a good court situation and nobody was railroaded. He is the guy that controls the jail to make sure that people are treated with respect and that people aren't in there that don't belong there. He is the guy that holds the peace in the entire county and he patrols to tell the other cops, if necessary, hey, stop harassing the people. So the chief court administrator may establish employment standards and implement appropriate training programs to assure secure prisoner custody and transportation. You see how they took the whole focus away from what he really is all about, although that is part of his job. Such standards and programs shall be enforced and effective by December 1st, 2000. Any property used by the sheriff for prisoner transportation shall be transferred to the judicial department. So the deputy who used to be the sheriff now works for the judicial department. Guess what the judge can do to any marshal that he wants? You talking about control and unlimited power? Who's going to put that judge in jail? Who's going to dare go up against that judge in Connecticut? Absolutely nobody. There is no justice in Connecticut. At least there won't be soon, because that's what this whole process is all about. Okay, attention deputy sheriffs. This is what they put out. A new state law makes substantial changes to the sheriff system in Connecticut and requires the chief court administrator to take certain actions, specifically Public Act 0099. An act reforming the sheriff system, creating the title of state marshal for the purpose of providing legal execution and service of process. State marshals will assume their functions currently performed by the deputy sheriffs. Why are they calling them deputy sheriffs? You see, not performed by the sheriffs, but by deputy sheriffs, provided that a referendum abolish the existing sheriff system. Now, right there, they use the referendum to make a constitutional change. Cannot happen, cannot be done, okay? Also, what they did in the referendum was to abolish the system, but they did not completely inform the people. And I think we have that in here. But I'll just quickly cover it just in case. And I don't want to forget this. To be completely informed is to mean exactly that. When someone goes to the voting booth to make a vote, they're not completely informed. I mean, how often any of us are really completely informed? How confused are all of us? We got all these people. We don't know who these people are. And we hit the I, we hit the R line, or we hit the D line, or we hit the I line, or whatever line you want to hit. Or you go vote the ins out, or whatever your strategy is, but you don't know who these people are. They don't tell you who these people are. There's no central place, and the committee men should have this up. This is what their job is, to make sure everybody knows who these people are. And we'll discuss that later on when we talk some political stuff later. But that's what their job was. But the bottom line is these people are not fully informed. You cannot have a constitutional change without the people making the change be fully informed. F-U-L-L-Y, informed. Not partially informed, fully informed. So, if these people are not fully informed, then they can't make a decision. And to be fully informed means you're going to go someplace, you're going to sit down, and you're going to hear the debate, you're going to hear the positions, you're going to get some words and thoughts, and you're going to say, what about this, and what about that, and you're going to discuss it. And when you really beat it to death, now you're fully informed, now you can make a decision. And that's the people. And but even more than that, they violated so many other principles. The U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Paragraph 2. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges, state and federal, in every state, shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. So what's the law of the land? The United States Constitution. What lays down the rules and the regulations? The United States Constitution. Every Constitution must repeat what is in the U.S. Constitution and work off that. They cannot violate the body. Now, the word amendment, and this was, I thought to myself, let me look up the word amendment. Let me really understand this, because I always thought I knew what the word amendment means, and it doesn't mean exactly what I thought it means. And now that I know what it means, and I think about the word, this is what it means, amendment. There are three different positions given on amendment. One has been, and these are all out of Black's Fourth Dictionary, and they recorded a case, Van Dusen versus Ruth, an act of relieving ill and charging for the better of the thing without involving the idea of any change in substance or essence. Well, when they made this change, did they change the Constitution in substance or essence when they got rid of the sheriff? Of course they did. Number two, Couch versus Southern Methodist University. Any writing made or proposed as an improvement of some principal writing. Did they improve on the sheriff? Absolutely not. Number three, Liddott versus McCluskey. In practice, it is the correction of error committed in progress of a cause. So if there is an error that needs to be corrected, did they correct an error by getting rid of the sheriff? Absolutely not. So there's more violence. And that's not the end of it. Oh, there's four, by the way. There's a fourth one, next page. The correction of an error, this is Hardin versus Boyd. An amendment is the correction of an error committed in any proceeding at law which is done by the consent of the parties. So if there's an error decided, and there's one or two errors in the United States Constitution. It doesn't affect us anymore these days, but they're in there. I'm not going to bring them up, but it doesn't affect us. It really doesn't. One of them has to do with the slaves. It doesn't affect us. Okay, ratify. What does it mean to ratify Black's Fourth? This is Coe versus Moon. The constituted ratification, the act relied on must be performed with full knowledge of its consequences and with an express intention of ratifying what is known to be voidable. Someone going into a box to pull a lever has no clue, number one. And before that, let's go to number one. One is the legislators created the act and made it into law, providing the referendum is done. That's not the process of a constitutional convention. It's not the process of amending the Constitution that's set forth in the Constitution. And we'll find this in Article 5, which we're going to read right now. I searched the internet up and down every which way. I went for hours. I went back a couple of times trying to find out what was the conclusion of the vote. It's found no. I haven't been able to find it. If anyone could find that, please get that to me. I'd love to see it. Because here's the criteria of the vote to begin with, which the whole process was wrong. It's illegal anyway. We've shown it being illegal many ways. And now here's another one, Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses, two-thirds, that's pretty hard to get, two-thirds of both houses, shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments. So they can propose amendment if the both houses, two-thirds, that's a lot of people. That's 66% of the people, okay? That's a lot of people, 66 and two-thirds, 67%. It's almost 70%. I mean, they made it really hard, and it doesn't stop there because, really, they moved the ratification part to 75%. So you got to get 60, almost 70% in both houses. Then you got to get 75% of all the states, and only then can it be amended, not changed. You cannot change the body of the Constitution. We're going to look at that in a minute, too. I think I have that here. Do I have it here? I might. But anyway, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments into the Constitution, or on the application of the legislator of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention proposing amendments. So what they could do, the states can come and make the call, and they need two-thirds, 66.6% of the votes in all the houses across the states in order to get a constitutional convention going. In a constitutional convention, no one can be an elected individual there. That'd be a conflict of interest. They're not the people. They're servants. Get out of here. Call for the convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states by the convention in three-fourths thereof. Now, just think about that. Three-fourths. Okay? Three-fourths of the states must ratify it. That's pretty darn hard to get. So now let's take and apply this logic, which has to be applied to the Connecticut. And you have both houses, and I'm not sure that both houses brought this up. They said the legislators, but they didn't say that this came through both houses. I'm not aware, so I don't know the answer to that one. But in any event, it should have gone through both houses, and both houses had to consent by two-thirds. That's almost 70% of both houses. Very difficult to do. Then they have to bring it to the people, and then the people have to ratify it by 75%, three-quarters, 75%. Did that happen? And they have to be fully informed. Going into the jury box, were they fully informed? Look, this stinks everywhere you go. Now, I showed you constitutionally in many, many different ways that this is illegal, unconstitutional. They pulled the wool over the people's eyes. They annihilated the most important office in America, which is the county sheriff. And now the fox is in charge of the hen house, got total control out there in Connecticut. Connecticut, you have a big problem, and you have to realize how serious this problem is. The people did not have the authority or the right to even get rid of the sheriff, and that's first and foremost, because you cannot have a court of record. Now, this is common law, and I know I had a debate with someone who just wasn't getting this point, and it's very important to get this point, common law point. In order to have a court of record, you must have court officers. Go back in history. This goes back before the Magna Carta. We can go all the way back to about 500 or 600 A.D., okay, at least, maybe even further. But in any event, what is required? In order to have a court of record, most important thing you have to have is the people. So you have to have the grand jury and you have to have the trial jury. The grand jury works outside the court, sees the problems and brings them into the court and passes it off, passes the football off to the jurist. Now it's the jurist's job to deal with it. They finalize it. But they're working together. They are one. They are the people. Okay? So that's one thing that's required in order to have a court of record. A court of record is a common law court, natural law. The next thing that's an important, that's a necessity, is a sheriff. You got to have a court officer responsible for making sure that due process has been applied, the law has been applied, and everything is going according to law. That's the sheriff. He is an elected individual, holds office, cannot be removed except for by the people themselves for bad behavior. Okay? So how do you get rid of that? How do you get rid of the sheriff? The sheriff also is the jailer. He's responsible for every individual in that jail. And if he's got people in that jail and he's holding them and they don't have indictments on them and he knows that, he's in trouble. He's in trouble. He doesn't know it, but he is in trouble. We need to educate him, not beat him up. We need to educate them to make them understand this. Once they understand it, they refuse, now we go beat them up. But, you know, I know that they'll obey the law. They're looking for this. They really are. They're frustrated. Sheriffs are frustrated. They're ready for all this stuff. They're primed for it. We have to prime them in the law completely. So you need the sheriff. You cannot have it. Now, there's another person. There's a scientist involved that must be there. He's called the coroner, a medical doctor. He's a scientist, and he looks to see on foul play, okay, the most horrific acts of murder. Acts of violence, okay? And it's the coroner that sets the stage. So if you have a murder, okay, the sheriff goes and, you know, he's at the crime scene and the coroner's out there and he's collecting the necessary evidence and getting ready for his decision. And when he's finished, he'll write up his papers and what's going on. And if it's murder, he will be before the grand jury with the sheriff. Okay, as long as they have someone, he'll have the paperwork for murder, but until they find someone to arrest, of course, that's the sheriff's job. Once they find someone, they match it up to the individual. The two of them together have to go to the grand jury to get an indictment. Now, there is one other player that's not necessary in the court, but we have them in America. We've been working with them. We've actually been working more often than not in the courts, and that's the magistrate. Magistrate is the traffic cop. He just keeps things flowing and in order. Wait a second, just give a minute. Let this individual finish before you pipe in. Go ahead, finish. And you know, he's just the traffic cop. That's all. He doesn't get to decide anything. He just makes sure that the court flows in an orderly way. He's the orchestrator. Okay, that's all he is. And he signs off on the papers at the end of the day. The orders go out from the judge, but the judge doesn't make the orders. The people make the orders, and the judge signs the orders, and it goes to the sheriff, and the sheriff executes the orders, and that's how the judicial process works. Now, it's not working right now that way. They have fiction going on, and we need to fix it. But that's the problem in a nutshell right there. So let's see if there's anything else here. When ratified, When ratified by the legislators, 3/4 of the several states by convention of 3/4 thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall be in any manner effect in the first, fourth class, so on and so forth. Okay, I'll finish reading it. Fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, I went to look up into these articles to see what they were talking about here. It's the first and fourth clause in the ninth section, and both of them seem to be talking about income tax, I think, if I recall. I got to go back and study that, so I don't really understand what's going on, but that doesn't really apply for our day at the moment, but it might, because I'm going to look further into that. I just don't understand it yet. Okay, final item to look at here is Black's Fourth. The Chief Executive and Administrative Officer. This is the sheriff. This is Black's Fourth of the sheriff. And this comes up in a case, Harrington versus Langston, and in a few other cases, Leonard versus Town of Greenville, and I'm sure there's a lot more. But anyway, the Chief Executive and Administrative Office of a county being chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of the criminal courts and civil courts of record, such as serving processes, summoning juries, executing judgment. Did you hear that? Summoning juries. That's the when someone gets arrested by any police officer, they got to bring them to the sheriff. And the sheriff's got to decide whether he's going to keep them or not. This is a code of violation. If you think you can apply that in court, give them a ticket and let them go. Don't bring them down here. Where's the grand jury indictment? See, that's what the sheriff should be doing. But the sheriff is the guy that gets the case, which is a real case, like murder or whatever, and whether it's delivered by a code enforcement officer or one of his deputies or he himself. Okay? Now he gets them, and his very first job, immediately, if it's Monday at 3 p.m., he needs to get onto the phone. He needs to have a number directly to the administrators of the grand jury. Say, hey, look, I got a guy in here. It's a violent crime. He's up for murder or assault or whatever it is. And I need to get him before a grand jury. Well, we're going to have a grand jury in here on Wednesday, so you want to do this in the morning? Yeah, let me get in the morning, 9 o'clock, and we'll bring the coroner and whatever. Okay? You see, that's how it works. The prosecutor doesn't get involved in any of this. He has no power. He has no authority here. He's not a constitutional officer. He doesn't have our concern in mind. He's a political animal. He's concerned with his own rear end, and he's concerned with the judge and all of his political buddies, and he doesn't care about the Constitution. He doesn't apply here. For the sheriff to go beg to it's really pretty pitiful. We went down to see this one sheriff in this one county, and I didn't realize how pitiful it is until I just studied and done all this homework here. And then we went, he's got to go cry. Well, you got to go get the prosecutor involved here. And the prosecutor refused to go forward. Why? Because we were going after judges. You think you're going to get a prosecutor to go after judges? No way. They're having tea together. They're having their shots together. They're down in the local hula house together or whatever it is that they're doing. But they certainly are not applying the law. Okay? They're not going to go out after these guys. The sheriff doesn't have to go through that. When the sheriff realizes the power and the authority, he just gets on the phone, calls the grand jury, gets his indictment, makes the arrest, and that judge is in jail or whatever the case may be. And that's the way it works. Yes, the prosecutor can call for the grand jury, and it better be a real lawful thing, but he can call for it, but it's not the norm. It is the sheriff. Everywhere I look, everywhere I read, everything I study, it is always the sheriff. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with the sheriff? Why don't they tell the sheriff this? They want to get rid of the sheriffs because they want to get rid of our liberties. So, okay, so that pretty much brings us to the end of those papers there and that information. Everyone should download that and read this stuff. I will post, I did not repost this paper, Connecticut Unlawfully Abolishes Sheriffs. I will post this paper up, and I'll try to do it tonight. I always try to get the recording up tonight immediately after, but I'll post it tonight. It'll be posted up on the media page. Just go to the blue line, click media, and it'll be down on the bottom. And for those who don't know, on the media page, we do have some other information, which is the media page brings you right to the court filing page. We have the writ quo warranto. We have the information, bills of exchange. These are all PDFs, and we have the mandamus to the sheriff, the updated one that we just read and fixed. Now, below that, we have the following papers define important legal terms that we, the people, should have knowledge of and can assist you in court. This is, if you're in court, you need some information. We're going to try to post some good information up here that you'll be able to use in court. What is a court of law? Courts that resist the Constitution, how to recognize them and what's going on with that. Judiciary immunity, do they have it? And I think right underneath that or in this general area, we're going to put in here Connecticut Unlawfully Abolishes the Sheriff. We'll be posting more papers here as we go along. I'm hoping to get maybe one or two more before next Monday, and we'll try to post a couple a week, which are very important, informative papers. We've been creating lots of papers over the years as we study the terms and the information, and that's why we're able to put a lot of footnotes, because we've researched all this stuff and we have them in files and in footnotes. We call it footnotes. And we have lots of information on the meanings of words and the meaning of phrases, on the meanings of different terms. We have memorandums and stuff, and all of this is important stuff. Each one of it is a lesson in its own that gives you a better understanding of the law, how things work in the common law, and how the mechanisms go, and so on and so forth. Look, we have to continue. Anybody that's going to be an administrator needs to study this stuff, but everybody should study it. And the key thing is, and this is, I've discovered this some years ago, Don't ever try to remember anything. Forget about it. Don't try to remember anything. Just try to understand it. When I came to that strategy in my mind, trying to understand things instead of trying to remember things, next thing I know, you know, all of a sudden these things are just falling out of my mouth. You know, I mean, where did that come from? Well, it gets recorded up there, and just by understanding is what really puts it into your brain. So for those who have that kind of problem with memory, forget about memory. Just understand it. At some point in time, it'll all of a sudden kick in, and you'll be saying things and saying, where did that come from? I say that to myself all the time. Where did that come from? So you got to get it. You really, you know, dive into this stuff and get involved. Okay. Let me go through a few things here. Gerard, do you have anything you want to add to any of this before we move on? Or anything you want to bring up before we move on?
No, we're going to move on. What's next on the agenda?
Okay, well, Gary, do you have anything, Gary? We're going to go through Gary, Sheila, and Eric. Let me go into the... let's do this. I'm going to clear... I'm clearing. Okay, queue is open. Only people I want to get in there is Gary. Well, actually, Gary, you're off the hook if you want to talk. You should be able to talk. But
well,
you
actually,
go next.
I'm open, and I'm ready to unmute Donald, our...
Do you want to have him go into the queue,
panel.
Or you want to just unmute him?
No, I got him unmuted.
Okay.
Actually, wait a second. I can't unmute him.
Have him hit star 6, and we'll pull him and put him in the queue. Nobody else go in the queue except for what we ask. Sheila, if you have anything that you want to share or bring up to the group, get into the queue. And Eric, with the court watchers, if you got anything particularly you want to bring up, get into the queue, and let's deal with any business at hand and new stuff. Did you unmute him, or is he in the queue, star 6?
No, actually, I can't unmute him, John.
He's unmuted. He's not in the queue, but he's unmuted.
Okay,
he's
go ahead.
On the side. Yeah, he is. I see him down there below you, Gary, on the active speaker. There he is.
But maybe his mic is muted on the side.
Yeah, there
we're
go.
Good.
There
we're good.
Go.
I was hearing. Yeah, we're all good.
Okay. So let me jump into it because we're kind of 50% of the call here, and I'm not going to belabor this. I just want to give people some kind of an idea. You know, we thought of a switch gears on things and maybe do like a little roundtable sometimes on some of these things that come up because it's a real teaching opportunity, you know, and I think it's important people see the process. And when that judge wrote the letter, which I read it, I think I read it 2 weeks ago, and both Donald and Dan Hunt gave very good answers, and that's where the idea. I said, "Gee, these are so good. We should get a panel to answer these to send them back to these judges because we don't want them to sit there and not be answered." But on the same token, you know, there's a lot of common law fundamentals in answering this letter, and this is a typical letter that judges send out. So I just want to go real quick now. I asked them to try to combine the two letters because they both made different points, both valid. And so I thought maybe we could combine the letters and make a consolidated letter to send to this particular judge. Now, just give me a minute. I'm going to get over here to the letter. And, this letter has all the...
Let me just pipe something in a minute first. What we're basically doing is creating a group of people, a small group, I'm not sure how many we'll go to, that will take all letters that come in and create a response. Gerard will check it up for accuracy to make sure that we're all on the same page and, you know, we're really being represented correctly. We're choosing people who we do believe have that ability. If a state gets a letter, you know, a state coordinator gets a letter from a sheriff or somebody, and they want to write the letter, they can write the letter, but then they need to give it to the committee, discuss it with the committee, make sure it's dressed up and looking good and right, and then the final approval needs to go through Gerard, make sure for accuracy of opposition and understanding of common law, and then the letter can go out. We have to do something to make sure that we're all on the same page, we're not going 66 different directions, but we do want to try to start training people to do these things, and ultimately everyone should be trained at some point to do these things. Every state coordinator, and particularly not state coordinators, But people who are running for the administrative process, those are the people that really want to jump into this and participate. Do your best to write a letter, submit it, in response to a situation, submit it to the committee, and then get together with them and, discuss it and make sure everything's working well. Go ahead, Gerard.
Well, what I'm hoping also out of this process that we can develop a library of even form letters. They're always giving us form letters. Well, guess what? We can have form letters in common law because the same subject will come up more than once, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel either time. And especially with these lawyers and these judges, because they kind of fit into a niche, and so you always get the same baloney from them, for lack of a better word. So, look, we'll save them, and if somebody has something, and they submit it to the committee, we could say, well, look, we have this letter we already did. Send this out. This answers it. It should handle it, And so I think that'll make life easier for us, if we have that library of stuff. So, anyway, without further ado, I just want to, and anybody that didn't hear this or didn't know, this was a letter in response. It was a memorandum. And what was special about it is that it was signed by a judge, and she signed it with an electronic signature, which is /S/ Beth Phillip. Now she says she's a designee of the Chief Judge of the United States Court for the Western District of Missouri. Now I don't know if that I guess she's a judge also, but she's picked up this memorandum. And the subject says, document received from the Unified Missouri Common Law Grand Jury received in my chamber. So obviously she's a judge. And so she says, as a designee of the Chief Judge of the United States District Court for the Western District of Missouri, I have reviewed the above referenced document for compliance with Administrative Directive 14. Now, what is that? You know what I mean? And both guys answered that pretty well, and we're going to get into that. I'm going to let them give you their answer on that. And then they go on and say that she says the document fails to contain a caption which properly identifies this court. So right away they're going to attack your form, right? Further, the document's attempt to abrogate laws of the United States and or the state of Missouri and create a status which exempts the signer from the normal operation of law. As such, the documents are a nullity and without legal effect. So right away, these are them sovereign guys that don't want to obey the law. You see the box that she's trying to put us in. And so she says, pursuant to the authority granted in the court in Bonk in the Administrative Directive 14, I am directing my chamber's staff to return the document to the author at the address provided on the envelope. And now what made this one so ordered, so she made an order, Beth Phillips. Now, that made this letter rise to the top because they, a lot of them don't return it because they get that file, failure to file, and they know that it's a crime. But this one here, she's making a lot of excuses why she returned it, which don't really hold water. So, who is Dan open? I'm not on the queue there. Would you like to comment on what you said about Directive Don? I'm sorry. About Directive 14, because she has a couple things, which is an Administrative Rule 14. Well, what's an Administrative Rule 14? Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, well, my take on that, first of all, we as the people are not subject to regulations, rules, statutes, codes, and so, that straight up threw a flag up for me. Davis versus Wechsler came to mind straight up. The assertion of federal rights when plainly and reasonably made is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. So what she's trying to do with Administrative Directive 14, which is very difficult to find out there, is sidestep the law. To me, that's clearly what that was. And then, like John mentioned earlier, Marbury versus Madison, all rules, laws, practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. So she has no standing with that, and that's just a clear attempt to sidestep the law.
So that was, yes, and that's absolutely true. And it's for us, believe it or not, that should be low-hanging fruit to most of us that understand common law. Like Don said, it threw up a red flag right away. And then the next one, which he nailed, was she says, this document fails to contain a caption what properly identifies the court. So go ahead, Dan. What was your answer to that?
Well, my thought on that was, you know, what is the duty of the courts? Because she sits there and says, and, you know, I'm sure Judge Beth Phillips, you know, knows what they're doing here. They know the duty of the courts. And, you know, that's clearly pointed out in Boyd versus United States. It is the duty of the courts to be watchful for the constitutional rights of the citizen and against any stealthy encroachments thereon. Okay? So, clearly, that is not on her list of things to do. So she's in bad behavior. That's what comes to mind with me in that situation, because it's their duty to protect us from that. And it even, there's other cases that support that. Gross versus the state of Illinois. State judges as well as federal have the responsibility to respect and protect persons from violations of federal constitutional rights. So, you know, clearly it's a non-answer. It's an excuse, like you said earlier.
Yeah, let me echo what you just said, because it is absolutely correct that she is in bad behavior. She has come up. Now, look, she is a judge. She went to law school. She's claiming a position. She's getting a salary. She's been elected or appointed. She's in that position. And then she takes code that violates our unalienable rights. She should know that. After all, she went to law school. She's getting paid the salary. Now, she is holding up code and violating unalienable rights of the people. Therefore, she is guilty of acting under the color of law and violating someone's unalienable rights. In this case, we the people. Now, that's bad behavior, and that person can be removed from office. That, but, of course, we can't do that right now, but we will be doing those things at some point. They need to understand, you better do your homework a little better, first of all. Second of all, you don't get to judge anything. You're just the traffic cop here. There is a process, and I'm not going to get too deep into it. It's called equity court, equity law, which America was the first one. I just realized this because I haven't been able to find equity law running anywhere other than in chancery and different cases. But the United States was the first one that took equity court and made it constitutional. They must, and that's where the judges are. The judges are in the equity courts, and they must obey the law of the land, Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. That's a requirement. So now they're held up to obey the law. Now, as long as they're obeying the law, guess what? They're going to make great decisions. We're not going to have big problems with that. You still have the appellate process in an equity court. A lot of your cases you might want to take into equity court, especially contract cases. That's what it's made for mostly, is commercial stuff, to get into the courts, to get out quickly. You're not waiting for a jury. You're trusting one jurist, that's the judge, and as long as he's applying the law correctly, you're going to get a fair judgment. And if he makes a mistake, you can appeal it. You get two appellate you can take it up twice to the appellate, and then you can eventually, if it becomes a true constitutional case, a violation of the Fifth Amendment or something, then you can take it to the United States Supreme Court. But it should be a trusted court at that point. And of course, the administrators will be watching like a hawk. We'll have the court observers in the court making sure that the truth is being applied, and judges are doing their business. So we will have justice again, even with judges. It can be done. But they have to come under Article 6 of the Constitution that all judges are bound by. Go ahead. Sorry.
The other thing I wanted to say, and I did say this 2 weeks ago, is, you know, the fact that we're going to answer these letters in a more timely fashion, and we're going to answer them very accurately and send them out. What they don't realize is that this is an exhibit, this letter on this judge. Look, at court is in session. When the time comes, this judge has indicted herself with this letter. And believe me, this is going in the record. I mean, look, she made it as a memorandum. She took it out of a court file and she sent it back to us. We're going to send the response back to her. That's going in the record. They're going to have to be worried about that. And when they realize that this is what we're doing, I think you're going to see stupid responses get down to less, because they're not going to want to stick their – look, this judge stuck her neck out in every other line, and you guys picked it up right away. Boom, boom, boom. You know, like she says, the caption doesn't properly identify the court and blah, blah, blah. You know, look, we learned, one of the first things we learned when we were studying Thornton is that content trumps form. You know, so it doesn't matter that maybe you don't have your heading in the right place. It's the form of what you're saying. And so, Don, you did a really good job here about saying, you know, look at common law, common sense. I'll let you go ahead, you know, because it really does, you know, show what the caption really does show where it's going and why. And I'll let you go ahead and expound upon that, because I thought you did such a good job on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when I kind of actually got my jaw dropped a little bit when I saw this, because it's like, wow, how do you write something that's so deceptive, title it in all bold letters, all caps across the top, and say memorandum, and knowing full well that really what you're going to say, the body below, is what's going to be the controlling factor of this document. And like John said, they know what they're doing. They went to school. And again, I was like, man, bad behavior yet again. You know, because at the very end it says, so ordered this day, you know, November, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, she issued an order, titled it a memorandum, and, you know, that's just outright criminal.
Boy, could you ever get away with that?
Right. And then even with that, when she says that, too, you know, what came to mind, too, with me was, you know, about how judges really, you know, I think it was Cohen versus Virginia, maybe, where judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to assert that which is not given, right? And the one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. I mean, I see this and I see treason written all over it. I'm sorry, Judge, you don't know who you're messing with here, I don't think.
Exactly. They're not used to the people pushing back. And, you know, we're all stupid, so, you know, we're not attorneys, and so therefore we're in the wrong church, wrong pew, or whatever you want to call it, you know? But,
well, you know, and Gerard, how do we word how do you actually word a response to a judge without making them, you know, maybe coil back for another strike?
Well, I don't know. All I know is when John and I used to go on early, we were very persnickety, maybe too much so. But we always said, nah, let's let it go. And, you know, a couple times maybe we shouldn't have been that persnickety. But, you know, look, at the people are sick of this garbage. So when we come back and we slap her, look, at we're not slapping her with anything that she didn't give us. You know what I mean? So I don't look, at the more she recoils and comes back, the more rope she's going to get to hang herself. I would say, I don't care how you answer this, I think they did a good job of, you know, putting in here. Matter of fact, I think it was you, Don, that put in here the definition of a caption.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing is, you know, the bottom line is that the judge is in bad behavior. You know, it said in here that, you know, with the caption, that, you know, like you said earlier, the document fails to contain a caption which properly identifies this court. Now, that's kind of really totally ridiculous. Anybody who would actually look at the writ of quo warranto using common sense will clearly be able to see that it was served via the United States Postal Service to United States Supreme Court judges and all federal district judges via United States Postal Service, the United States Supreme Court, and all United States District Courts. Now, how you can say this document fails to contain a caption which properly identifies this court, I mean, that's just that's a song in advance. You know, and that's just, you know, criminal.
Yes, yes. And you know, it's funny because John and I have seen this many, many times, the answers like this, you know, through the courts as we were learning, you know, and there's so many other people that get these pat responses, you know, you have no standing and this type of stuff. There's, you know, there's no caption which identifies it. And you said it, you know, that, my goodness, it's common law, and it's been sent to the court, and it's called the Coroanto. You know what I mean? There's a lot of hello type stuff in here. So I don't think that the way you answered it was over the top either. You know, and then the other letter, which was done by Dan, there was another point that he brought out that was even different than your point, and I don't remember what that was. Do you remember? I have to go through and read it here.
He said on its face it appeared to be a statute, and statutes do not supersede common law, and that is absolutely true. He went on to also say that she inferred that the quo warranto itself attempts to exempt people from an unspecified law, okay? And she claimed, but she ignores, and that it doesn't even tell us, like, what laws that are supposedly being subverted by us. So, you know, again, it's a non-answer.
Right.
The thing with this, and to answer Gary, you know, or Gary's question to you, and if I can just expand on it, you know, when I look at this, even the guys when we walk in the committee about this, you know, what basically the rule of thumb is, you know, professional, educational, but let them know that they need to start doing their job. So that's kind of how you answer this to a judge. Now, because, I mean, this one I think should be a little different because it came as an order. Now, I know that, you know, I don't certainly have privy to all the information of how we're going to respond to these things because we're just a committee that are, fettering out those redundant responses that have already been addressed. But our task is to find the ones like this that need to be addressed and get it to the right hands and talk about it. And we have the meeting and meet those three standards that we just met with under common law, our knowledge, and then, you know, run it through the gamut so that we got the best answer that we can get out to them, not to stir the nest too much. But you got to let them know that they're not, you know, they're not doing their job. They have to do their job. We now know, and we can prove it. So stop playing. And you know what? They are all misbehaving. There's no justice left in America. John said it so many times, and unfortunately, I've discovered that myself. I mean, it's true. And so people better wake up, and we need to, you know, get together on this and let them know that you know, we're sick and tired of it. And we're not going to take it. So our responses are going to be, like I said, professional, respectful, educational. Got to educate them because even though we know that they know, the right honorable thing to do is let them, you know, treat them like they don't know and say, by the way. And then after that, like you said, you can go out and then you spank them.
Yeah, let me just squeeze something in here a minute. The people on this committee, there's a couple of people on this committee. We are looking for some other people to join this committee and to participate. And, you know, again, we want to encourage everyone from every state to consider writing their own letters, but then pass it through the committee and then approved by Gerard for accuracy and we're good. But we found the people that are in this committee on the boards responding particularly to these responses from the judges. So we're keeping an eye on the boards for people. All of a sudden we'll see someone that is able to articulate the positions of the judicial process on the boards, and then we'll approach those people to see if they want to be on the committee. But we do want to build this up, but I know we don't want to build it too big either, but we'll have to play it by ear. At some point, maybe we'll have to have numerous committees because we have letter writing not only to the judges that may respond. We have some that lawyers that have responded on behalf of sheriffs. We also have had postmasters respond. So we have to deal with that, and that's what the committees are going to be dealing with, is those letters. And anybody who has gotten a letter, they need to bring it to that committee. Again, if they want to formulate their own letter first and pass the letter to the committee with what they'd like to answer with, and then the committee can get, and then you can get together at a committee meeting. They'll invite you to their meeting to discuss that particular paper and see once what we can do with it. And because again, we have to train people, and people shouldn't feel bad if their work has changed. Believe me, my work has been changed many times in the past as I've been involved with lots of different things. It is what it is, you know, people. We have to learn, and we have to become educated, and we have to become seasoned. And this is the way to do it right now. Let's get involved. And to those people listening on the radio, you know, we have quite a few hundred people that have been listening to us. Last week, we had almost 300 people that had come into the room, and that doesn't include the people that came in over radio. So we don't know how many people are coming in through the streams that are coming in. But those are people that are on the streams that are listening in. Get out to nationallibertyalliance.org. Become a member. Get involved. Digest our front page. Watch the videos on our front page. Get to the media page where we have all the court filings. Read our papers. Get involved. And volunteer some of your time. You know, you're working straight from home. Maybe you can volunteer an hour or two or three a week or something, whatever it is. Maybe you're retired and you can really get involved. Whatever the case may be. But we need the assistance. We need the help. We need the membership. Only we, the people, can save America. And before I pass it on back to you, Gerard, I just want to make mention that the call-in number for those who are listening over the live stream, if you're listening to this and it's on a Monday night between 9 and midnight, we're live, the phone number to call in is 605-562-3140. The participant code is 385-698. I said 6 before, it's 8. 385-698. So let me repeat that one more time. 605-562-3140, and the participant code is 385-698. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you. Well, anyway, that's the long and the short of it, and our responses will be posted. They'll get sent out to the judge. You'll be able to go on the site in a spot, and you'll see the judge's layout letter. You will see our response, the people's response to the judge. And each one will, you know, will have a whole section, and that's a good learning tool for everybody. You know, it's the best way to learn is it's like hands-on. It's almost like having an apprenticeship, so to speak. So, anything else?
Yeah,
Dan,
Maybe we'll post that underneath the court filings. We'll get a title down there and post it down there. Because look at the page that we're setting up for court filings, which is the media page. That's the most important pages to keep up to date on. And remember, reading this stuff is your education. Writing this stuff was our education. Researching it was our education. Reading it and studying and following through with the research through footnotes, that's your education. And if you once you start to see how these things work, you know, most of the words are not our words. They're the words of the United States Supreme Court, great rulings, by the way, and they're the words of our founding fathers. They're the words of the great works of the great thinkers of the past. They're the words of God through the Bible. They're the words of the people that have been building liberty in the world for thousands of years. So,
okay, thank you. So, Don, if you got anything else, I'll let you finish, and then we'll move on to the open mic here.
No, I think we've got it covered pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, before we go to the open mic, let's Sheila is next anyway. I just want to take on a few people. Sheila, do you have anything that you want to update us with? Sheila is involved with our one of our groups, and it is the media campaign group. We have also the courtroom observers group. So, Eric, if you have anything to add, pipe in, get into the queue, and we'll get you up here. But, Sheila, do you have anything you want to expound on and let us know about?
Well, I just want to say I'm very happy and welcoming the Redneck Radio Station, and that we'll be broadcasting through three great radio stations. I just want to say that please come over to the media meeting, and if you can't, please visit the forums up on the website. Because it's great information up there. Many members have shared many ideas to help promote National Liberty Alliance, because actually all the members are promoters. You know, we need your support. So that's pretty much all I want to say. We have some projects going on. I want to ask you, John, real quick, did you complete the media file?
No, Brian has not got back to me, and I didn't see anything, so it kind of just got lost. But let's get on the line tomorrow. We'll fix it.
Okay. Okay. Well, once that's completed, then I can, you know, I'll be able to share more of the members' projects.
Okay.
But until then, you know. But you'll be updated on, if you tell everyone to go to the front page and on the right side of the page, you'll see, you can see the media forums where anybody makes a comment or a suggestion. It's right there on the front page.
Okay, great. All right, let me make a, you know, one of the things we did do when we set up the site and recently we changed it is we had ability for people to make comments on every page. Well, because we wanted to get conversation going, we wanted to get interaction going, and so on. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to monitor it. And unfortunately, the enemy comes in and puts their poison, and they have nothing else better to do. They're like little children, and it's really, it's a shame. I feel sorry for these people that they,
really?
They need to get a life or something, because to have to come on and go up again against righteousness, I mean, they must have some skin in the game here.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, you know, we've kind of started shutting down the comments on most of the pages, but we do still have them open in different areas. And one of the areas I think I'm going to open it up, and this is going to be the most important area, in my opinion, to get involved with, and that is on the media page itself, which is called Court Filings. But you just click on Media or highlight Media and click on Court Filings. And that's where we have all this posted information that we're talking about. Now, on this page, we're only going to tolerate conversations that are focused and on point and talking about the cases or the court cases that's involved on this page alone. We'll write a little write-up on it, and we'll open the comment area up, and we'll get a couple of people, maybe the committee people, maybe we'll get them the authority to monitor that page to make sure that everything is on point. We'll be able to delete things that are off point. And here's where we're going to find the cream of the crop. When people get discussing these cases, the quo warranto, and the bill of exchange that we wrote, and the mandamus to the sheriff, and any other papers that we filed up in there, and plus the letters that we're going to be putting up in there, you get some. We open up the board here on this page, and now this is where we're going to discover the people that really are qualified to get involved with us, and we'll start getting more and more people and build more and more committees to get things going. I do want to say one other thing. You know, I've been assaulted pretty drastically, privately mostly, you know, with their own little private group. You know, I don't know. They're trying to intimidate me in some way to respond to them, which they'll get no answer from me. But attacking ultimately the paper we wrote, which we had to, it was a survival paper, and that was the Bill of Exchange. I've had some people asking me to take that down. I've had people I know that I respect that have asked me to take it down. It's not going to be taken down because then I'm going to be a hypocrite. Because what I wrote in that and worked with others to make sure we get a real accurate paper on these bills of exchange, we really truly believe that it's immoral. And we can't participate with it. Again, people can do whatever they want. They're free to do whatever they want. As long as they don't bring in and attach it to us, we're all good. But if you're going to ask me if it's moral or immoral, I'm not going to tell you that it's not immoral if it is immoral. I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to tell you what it is. It's immoral. And so I've got a lot of flack over that in personal letters, but I get those things anyway. But, you know, right now that's the big thing. People are upset with that. But it is being filed. It is a paper that was done honestly and with research and with concern. We are not doing anything in any way that the statutory system can come out after us in any of their legal ways or what they call legal ways. Nothing they could do to us. They're frightened to death, and they should be. They should repent and get onto our side and do the right thing, and that would be very much appreciated. So it's time for them to wake up and smell the coffee and get back to America. All right, Sheila, are you done?
Yeah, I'm complete. Thanks a lot, John. I yield.
Okay, I'm going to hand it over to Gerard in a minute or two, but I just want to take on one or two more of these questions in here. So we got Sheila's done. Let me move to Rick from Shake and Wake Radio. I see he's in the queue. I don't want to throw anyone out of the queue, so let me just unmute you. Okay, Rick,
really quick.
Right ahead. You got the mic.
I don't want to take a lot of your time and stuff. we expose a lot of stuff on our network and documentaries and all the great hosts that we play. I almost fell off the couch while I was hearing you earlier tonight saying that to amend the Constitution, they need a vote of 66.6%. Not 50% or 55% or 70%, but 66.6%. And a lot of the documentaries that we play...
And then it has to be ratified by 75%.
Yeah, but the point of them slipping in that 66.6%...
Well, what it is, it's two-thirds. It's two-thirds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the point I'm making, all I wanted to say is, it's quite clever. Just like one of the first gun bans that went down is a law called 666, and it was one of the first gun bans. I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not saying every single Freemason who worked on the Constitution or this New World country that we created, but you got to admit that is a little suspicious. That's all I wanted to say. Think about that. If we want to amend our Constitution, we need... Who would come up with that number, 66.6%?
Well, they didn't come up with that number per se. They came up with two-thirds and three-quarters, and that makes sense. So I think it's just a coincidence. It is in our Constitution, and it's appreciated. Hey, look, it's very difficult. Just think, you got to get politicians in two different houses to agree with two-thirds of vote in both houses. And that's just the beginning of it. Now you got to go convince all the people, and you got to fully inform them, fully inform them. Now that's a job in itself. And then the three quarters, 75%. Wow, they really did make it difficult to amend the Constitution.
Right.
And I appreciate that.
All I was saying is when they throw in that number, like in a gun ban bill or anything. You know, I mean, to me, it just sounds, you know, like they're giving you another clue, but whatever.
Right. Well, the gun ban bill.
Thank you for taking my question. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
The gun ban is
666. A gun ban bill would only be, again, another violation of the Second Amendment, trying to change the Constitution through an act, and it cannot be done. We read about that tonight, so can't be done.
Right, and I'm just saying, Satan likes to let everybody know his people got his hands in everything, so it could be. Thank you for taking my question, John.
Okay,
have a great night.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let me just catch up on the board here. Hang on a second. Next question, should dump Sheila. Okay, Sheila's open. Don's done. Rick's done. Okay, next person is Mike from Pennsylvania. I'll take Mike from Pennsylvania, then I'll pass the calls over to you, Gerard, after this. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes. This is about the the history of the U.S. Constables. I want to email this to you, John.
Okay.
Someone from our from Allegheny County, from our group, brought this to our attention. They have the same powers of the county sheriff, but it's minimized. I'll just email that to you and Gerard.
Yeah, I've never looked into the constables, so it'll be interesting. I know that they got constables in England. I know constables have been mentioned and brought up in history when I read about common law. They've been brought up, and they have some authority. And I suspect that you're right, that they really are. It's just a different name for the sheriff, but you're saying that they've been watered down with their powers and authorities? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not... They have the same amount of powers, but it's not like the full power of the county sheriff.
Right.
If
I take a look at it. Send it to me. What's it, a PDF?
Well, it's an email. It has a bunch of links.
Okay.
From different sites, from like
copy Gerard. Send it to me, John at nationallibertyalliance.org, and send it also, you know, a copy to Gerard. This way, one of us is sure to get it. And let me just make this point, because this was brought up earlier before we started our program, and it's brought up a couple of times. Whenever anybody sends me email, I have an autoresponder set up. I got your email, and it says on the autoresponder, I received your email. And then the two notes that I have in here, that this, the purpose of this email is for communications, and that's what you're doing. You're going to communicate with me. You're going to send something, and I may communicate back, and so on and so forth. And that's the purpose of my email. But I write down that if you have me on some kind of a list, people that email every, we got some noise coming through here. We got people that are sending emails out that they send them every day. They maybe have 100, 200, 1,000 people. I have no idea. There are many people on the list. And then they have me on that list, and I get a lot of that stuff. And a lot of it is long-winded, and that's not the I don't have the time to get involved in those things. So that's what I'm asking people to do. If you have me on that kind of list, remove me from that list. If you're soliciting me by email, please remove me from that list. So it's an automatic response saying that. It's not saying that you can't communicate with me, because it is say I am saying the purpose of my email is for communication, to have a conversation one-on-one. And again, I also tell people, and I don't think I wrote this down, but I do tell people, don't make your email long-winded to me, because if it's long-winded, the delete button comes up real quick. I got too many emails to go through, too many things to do. If something is really that important, you know, get a hold of me, get a hold of Gary, get a hold of Gerard, even get a hold of the committee. Talk with those people there, too. Just talk to some of the other people, you know, getting some ideas and then eventually maybe getting it up to myself or Gerard, but or try to get us directly, or bring it up on a Monday night program. We do want to hear everything, and that's why we give 3 hours every Monday for the sole purpose of communicating to all of the members that are interested in doing so, and to answer their questions, to inform, to enlighten, to educate, and so on. So that's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. So, but anyway, I just wanted to add that in. Mike, I appreciate you get that to me. Anything else you want to add on that?
That it's going to be titled, the subject is going to be history of the constable. And I think there's about 25 states there's about 25 states that have constables.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think I heard that there are some constables in America. We need to look into that then. I appreciate that. Okay, let's go to the next caller. And let's stay on point. One question or one comment per person. And if you want to have a second, you can go off out of the queue and then get back into the queue again so that we can try to get everyone, because we are going to end exactly at 5 minutes to midnight. And Gerard, I'm going to pass it to you. You can hit the button, next question, and you got the board for now. I might pipe in here or there, but go ahead.
Okay, we got Michigan Tim. Go ahead, your mic is open. Michigan Tim, you are unmuted. You must have went to the refrigerator, huh? What is that area called? Are you there, Tim? 989. Okay, I'm going to go ahead to the next one.
Gerard, this is Tim.
Boy, you just got me in the nick of time, buddy.
Thank you. I had a amplifier plugged in on the phone. I couldn't respond. But thank you for taking the call, and thank you all you fellows for taking care of business up there. This is Tim from Michigan. I just had a question, Gerard. When you were talking about the judge that was designated as a respondee for your notice, I'd like to know who designated her, and are they in agreement with what she said in her response? I yield now and wait for your response.
Yeah, well, we sent it to the district court judge. Let me see. Her letter says, I am the designee. So I would imagine that judge looked at that and told her to do it. I mean, I don't care if he told her or he didn't tell her. You know what I mean? If she's answering for him, he's responsible. Okay, because we sent it to all the judges. Now, she is a judge. It says it reached my chambers, and I am the designee. I'm not sure if she means that she's the judge for that particular area or she's the designee for the upper judge. But it doesn't matter. We'll respond back to her. And, you know, it's not like it's a lawyer. And she did an order, so I think we have to respond back to her. And as far as, you know, if there was anybody else involved, it doesn't take them off the hook. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I think that's pretty cut and dried on that particular one.
Okay, thanks for answering my question.
You're welcome. Okay, Virginia. Curtis from Virginia.
Well, actually, this is his wife, Debbie, from Virginia. Have you got me?
Well, we'll take his wife. That sounds good.
Okay. I am on the course, and actually I'm ahead of him on the course. I just wanted to put that in there. But I have been trying to donate money under my name, and I have my own PayPal account where when it comes up, I try to get it paid through that, and there's money in my account, but it tells me I still need to add money to the account. And I've got two different checking accounts with two different debit/credit cards connected to it, but it's still not recognizing it. And I need to have somebody either try to help me fix that or call me.
Yeah, let me tell you what you can do. Let me tell you what you could do with that, because PayPal has been, although they are the enemy, you know, but they have a good service, and I do use it. It's not bad. But PayPal is very good with customer service. And if you go to PayPal, I guess it's paypal.com, log in, okay? And I don't think you even have to log in to do this. Up at the top right, you'll see a phone number. And if you call up that phone number, someone will answer. I forget the hours. They do have pretty long hours. But just call between the hours and explain the problem to them and what you're doing, and they will look into the situation, and they'll be very specific. They've solved every problem I've ever had, and I've never had to call more than once on any problem. So they're a bank, and they do very good. Huh?
I've already done that. I've already called them. I called them first to see if there was an issue with my account and to see if there was, you know, any, because I don't keep a whole lot of money in there, but I wanted to see if it was just not recognizing your account or whatever. And it's the communication between the two.
Well, there's two ways to do it. There's two ways to do it. You can put in money into the account through going through an email. And I don't know if you're familiar with how to do that, but you should be able to just go up to the donation page, click on Donate Now, and if you come down, there are choices. One-time donation, or you can go on to a monthly thing. And so there's a number of choices on a one-time donation. And you shouldn't have any problem there. Are you having a problem there at that one?
Yeah, that's where I'm having the problem. I went to that, and I tried to do the monthly thing, and it will only accept the PayPal, even though it shows credit cards. It will only accept when it goes through the PayPal account. It won't go through my credit
that
card.
On that one, it's set up as a subscribe, so they only accept, I don't know why they set it that way, but the one time will accept credit cards. The only other way you could do it, if it's a one-time thing, is you can just send it through the email. You go up to PayPal, and you send through the email, and you put in the email address. And the email address for this particular, you should be able to do it through john@nationallibertyalliance.org, but if it doesn't take that, I originally opened this account many, many years ago under one of my corps, and it's john@xylem, that's xylem.net, if you don't get through national. X, and the X-ray, Y is in yellow, L is in lemon, E is in Edward, M is in Mary, xylem, xylem.net.
Uh-huh.
So it's john@xylem.net. That should definitely go through, but it might go through at John at National Liberty Alliance because I moved the information over to that. But I still sign in under Xylem, and so do it at John at Xylem if you want to do that one. You can send it through email.
Thomas left when I told him not to.
That's through email through the PayPal account.
Luke Loyal at the end
right.
of Myrtle Butler,
yeah.
And I told him no anyway.
Gerard, mute your mic. If you go to paypal.com, I think it is, sign in. And then you'll pick make a payment with an email, and you go to that page, and what you do is you make the whatever it is that you want to put into that account and send it to john@xylem.net, and then click send. And what happens is your account, they remove money from your account, put it into my account, and then an email goes out to me to tell me that someone had transferred some monies.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's another way.
We'll set it up that way then.
Right, appreciate it.
Also, one other quick question. The donations for the raffle that was going on for the July and August.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that a little bit, and I'll just talk a little bit about it. It's the fundraiser. you know, look, it is unfortunate. I didn't really want to talk about it, but I realize I have to talk about it. It's unfortunate it didn't take off the way we hoped. We only had a few states that did get involved. And I did get sick recently, and goodness, I'm still kind of recovering now. But nevertheless, I'm going to be going out this week, gathering all the numbers. I'll get it posted up. Someone told me that the fundraiser link, it doesn't work. It goes to the sheriff's paper, so I'll have to fix that. So I'll update that. We'll have all the numbers for the last 2 months up there. And I do have an envelope with some people who did go through the process, and I'll go through those this week, and if anyone has hit the numbers, we'll deal with that appropriately and get it done. It was for January and February. But, you know, everything was behind. It was only recently, about 3 weeks ago, which was the final mailing that I received on the fundraiser. And then that's when I got sick. So, but
yeah, I think
they're
going to have kind of kicked everybody in the butts with all of that. But we have four people from our group that hit. But my biggest thing was I just wanted to make sure that you all had received the monies. So
right.
I guess
I will post
there was a way
everything.
To contact people, because we ended up sending about $600. And so I just wanted to make sure, because we sent like the first group that we got, plus we helped somebody else with their tickets. Uh-huh. And so two of the people that won in our group was my son and his wife. So he's been hounding me. He won on a Sunday for $100.
Right. I will definitely get it done this week, and we will post the first name or whatever. You know, we won't give anyone's full name on this, but we'll post the first name and their state of the person who hit and what number it was, and we'll do that. You know, I'm sure there's a few people that hit on it, and we'll try to get that taken care of this week. Again, I apologize for not getting to it, but that one of the things that we're doing now, is hopefully some good products that are appropriate for what we're doing. You know, like this food thing. That'll be helpful to support us, and people will be getting a great product that tastes good. And the important thing is this stuff can last for 20 years. You know, it comes in nice. Once we put the page, you go look at this stuff. It's really good. It comes in buckets. You can buy small amounts. You can buy large amounts. And you can buy so much every month and keep storing it away. And you'll have plenty of food in an emergency. And so that's what people really should be thinking about. I'm looking for, because every once in a while I get a few extra bucks and I'm able to put things away, and I do it in silver, okay? And so I buy junk silver. And I think I'm going to look around to see if I can find someone that I can work something out with on junk silver and sell junk silver, because I think one of the best things people could invest in is the American coin, the silver dollar, and the quarters, the silver quarters, the silver dimes, the silver half dollars. Everybody understands them, and when we have a truly collapsed economy, once things settle up and, things will start bartering again, that silver dollar is going to be the most powerful, in my opinion. And everybody understands it. Everybody knows what it is. And, and it's silver, you know. And so that's something to think about. We also have the phones up there. Every state needs a phone, so getting the phones through our system, it's a Follow Me phone. It's really a great service. And I've been using it for, 7 years or so, maybe more, a long time, 10 years maybe even. I use it a long time. And it's the best service that I've ever had for phones, because it's very versatile. It's integratable. You can really make your business look sophisticated. And it's just so many things you can do with this service. But it's perfect for what we're doing. And so every state needs a phone number and a fax. And, they should be getting that through us, because we get a few dollars every month, and that supports, National Liberty Alliance. Now, the states at some point won't need those numbers. We'll eventually get to the counties, and every county should get one. But the states can transfer that to whatever county they want to. Whoever's been paying the bill can transfer it into their county or transfer it to someone else and utilize it for the counties, because every county is going to have a phone number, and we are going to post a directory up on National Liberty Alliance for all of the grand juries in America as we're able to construct the necessary administrative processes for them, and so that anybody who really wants to, find, because I get calls all the time, people think we're up and operational yet still, we're not, but But we'll be getting calls from people. You know, we'll send them to the directory, and they look up their state, look up their county, and make the phone call, and they're talking to the administrators in their county, and they'll help them out in any way they can because that's our job, and to make sure that due process is not violated on any of the people within our counties. And so we'll set that up, too. And again, you know, that kind of a thing helps pay the bills because we get a buck or two or three from each phone each month from each phone system set up. And that's how we are going to be able to operate. And, of course, whoever can give us $5 a month or more, I mean, I think most everyone can do that. $5 a month or more is far less than the tax you pay on your coffee and donut that you might buy in the morning throughout the month. So
I was going to say, Starbucks is $5. I mean,
yeah, there you go. But I'm just talking about just the tax you pay on that stuff across the month. $5 is less. So, but anyway.
And is there a list of these letters that have been going out in the order that needed to be going out?
I wanted
to make sure, because we come in on a late state, so I want to make sure that all of our letters that needed to go out are being sent out.
Okay, which letters are you talking about?
About the sheriffs, the Kiwantas.
Yeah. They should be going out, you know, to find out who's behind and in the rears on that. You'd have to talk with Gary,
okay.
And we're pushing the people to make sure they get the work done. Look, I'll say this again. 12 weeks ago, I said we're 6 weeks away from really doing what has to be done. And
yeah.
Today, I say again, was 6 weeks away to do. What has to be accomplished right now can be accomplished in 6 weeks. But in order to accomplish that, we need volunteers, people to assist. They need to call Gary or the district coordinators and volunteer their time to help to assist, to gather together all the addresses, the names, the emails, the faxes of all the people necessary across America. So each state is responsible for getting this job done. And it's not being done, not quick enough. And that's why we're being held back. So if people really want to help us get forward, volunteer some time. Get onto Google. Find out what it is the information is needed. And then get appointed for that information. Get onto Google. Find it. Gather the information. Get it to the district coordinator, whoever it is that's in contact with you on that. And then if you could do another one, they'll give you another piece of work to do. We need volunteers. Please, let's get this job done. We cannot send out the bill of exchange, nor can we send out the mandamus to the sheriff until we get all this information. We need every email address and every fax number for every sheriff in America, and that's about 3,000 of them. So if each state goes out, I found New York very quickly. I went out and Googled, and in 20 minutes I had all of their phone numbers. I think I had their fax numbers, I had their emails, had everything. And that was a while back. And so anybody, you know, every state should go out and get their sheriffs, get them together and get them out to the necessary contact, which would be state coordinator or, you know, work. Don't double do the work. Don't just do anything. Go find out what needs to be done. Talk with the state coordinator or the district coordinator or to Gary and work out what needs to be done. And get it done. Once we get all that information, I've already worked on all the other stuff. I'm working on email addresses. I'm getting this. I got the software, loading up the software, preparing for that. And all I need to do now is feed in the papers and feed in the email addresses. We're all set up on the faxes, too. We just need to feed in the faxes, fax numbers. But we have to get this information.
Gary, this is Curtis, the other half of Debbie here.
Hey, Doug.
She asked the question on what to do, but I've got control of that. We're just about done with the quotes. I have mailed out the list. All the sheriffs have got it. We've got it to the congressmen and senators here. The U.S. has got it.
Uh-huh.
We're just doing, we've got the clerks have got it. We're finishing up right now. I've got the attorneys. Is what I'm working on now. I just got those in the envelopes.
Okay. Well, we need right. One of the most important things we read right now is we have 8 papers to go out, and what we're doing now is we're going to send out the papers hard copy from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And we're going to set a page up, a list in there, of all of the, all 50 Unified grand, Common Law Grand Juries, one for each state, and we're going to put the address and their phone number, their fax number, and email address, and that'll be on the back page or one of the pages of what we send out as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which also will have an address. And this way, they'll be knowing to understand to respond to their state. So look it up, because this is Unified United States. Now, if we send out one hardcore mail, you know, one paper mail, to certain individuals, for instance, all federal judges, all federal courts, all of the law enforcement, the marshals, the FBI, and also the representatives in Congress and in Senate, they'll get all hard copies on that. Now, what we need to do, though, is also follow up to all those people, plus all of the congressmen and the assembly, you know, the assemblymen and the senators in every state and the sheriffs and everyone else will be done on faxes, will be done on email. But the sheriffs were asking every state to make sure every paper goes out hard copy if they can.
Well, we've done hard copies on everybody up to this point so far, except the BOS, you know, the commissioners.
Right.
And
are you communicating?
We got like 400 attorneys.
Are you communicating?
That's the biggest list I've got.
Are you communicating with the district coordinator on this?
Rather.
Are you communicating with the district coordinator on this and making sure that things are done?
Well, I am the district coordinator.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. All right.
Well, Veronica is the district coordinator. I'm the state coordinator.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you should know more than what's going on than I do, because I don't go to the meetings, and I do to some of them, but basically I don't. But, okay, yeah, let's get connected and get things going, whatever has to be done. There are a lot of states that haven't done what had to be done yet, and we got to get that info. Got
to
get it.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get 13 total state coordinators here, and I'm working slowly to build that up in regions. So we're a large state here in Virginia.
Well, let me make an announcement and a plea for help wanted. Anybody who is interested in Save America and they're not volunteering their time with us yet, please volunteer your time. Get out there. Go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight contacts, click on National Coordinator, and you'll get a list of all of the district coordinators. For instance, one district coordinator is Jan, and he covers Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. We have someone else, Stephen, who covers Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, West Virginia, Virginia, and Maryland. So, you know, we have about, I think, 11 or 12 district coordinators. They all have a few states that they're responsible for. So call your district coordinator. Let them know what state you're in. Let them know that you can give some time to help get the necessary information. Volunteer your time, and let's get this job done. We are 6 weeks away from getting to where we want to get to, and next week I hope we're 5 weeks away. But it's up to the people to get this job done.
I'm hoping to have ours done here this week. We should be complete.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, let me pass this back to Gerard. I guess we're done on this call, correct? Gerard, did you hit the next button?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Okay, who was just talking? I see Johnny R. Was that you?
Yeah, no, I hit it. That was from Virginia there.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I moved it on.
Okay, getting it back to you. You got it. We only got about 20 minutes, 30, a half hour, about a half hour.
Yeah,
but go right ahead.
Right, okay, so we got...
And let me tell you, 11:55, we're shutting down. We're moving into the music, and that's it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Very good. Johnny R. Simplified.
Yes, sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, thank you very much.
I think you're over-modulating. Are you talking on a microphone on a computer? If you are, go down to your speaker and get your mic and just lower your mic a little bit.
Yeah, it's breaking up bad.
Yeah, okay. You're over-modulating.
Okay.
You're still over-modulating.
We'll do it there.
You're
nope,
better.
Still over-modulating, but take it down a whole bunch.
Okay. So I just wanted to thank you guys for your hard work. I know you've been a little work getting this going.
Okay, and, you're still
yeah,
a bad cell phone
call. Yeah, we can't understand your words. You're overmodulating.
You're getting every three letters out.
Okay.
That's much
closer.
Better.
Hey, yeah, the other thing is pull your microphone away from your mouth a little, maybe another inch or two, and see what happens.
I've got a long ways off now.
Take your mic further away from your mouth.
Okay. I'm done now.
How far away are you from your mic right now?
I'm about 4 feet.
Really? Well, that tells us that you are overmodulating inside the system.
Yeah, okay. So can you see where I can
step back 8 feet?
Okay. All right. So anyway, I just want to let you know that I just sent Directive 14 to John and Shana and Gary. That's back in 2011, where the attorney that was acting in juris for somebody, they actually filed a treason and sent it to D.C., to the court in D.C., in the Missouri cases there.
Okay, did you get that, Gerard? I got part of it, but I really didn't get it all.
It was very hard. You'd break it up every other word.
Just read your email.
Yeah, send us an email and check in on your mic. Maybe you need a new mic.
Yeah, it's really, really bad.
I'll get that handy and get it fixed. But anyway, I don't know if you can hear me or not. Check that email. I'll send you the Directive 14. And I also have some software that I'm going to be putting out that will help us.
All right. It sounded like you said you're going to send us an email. Send it to John at nationallibertyalliance.org and send it
right
to Gerard. So both of us will get it, and we'll try to respond.
I'm sorry if my mic's cutting out on me, but thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Okay, thanks. Eric, you're open. That was a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See those things? You sit in your living room in your underwear and make $1 million. We're sitting in our living room in our underwear, save the nation here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the kids know I'm on the nationwide on the radio, so they take advantage. But go ahead.
Now, am I coming through okay, Gerard?
You're coming through good.
Beautiful. We have a request for courtroom observers in Kansas. So anybody around the Kansas area, southwest corner down near Salina. So if anybody's in that area, even out of state, it would be nice if they made the trip for John in Kansas. He's got an appearance. They're just laying tickets on him out of nowhere and soaking him dry. It's a typical thing that's going on everywhere around the country. And if anybody can get to this will be, I believe it's a week from today. It's the 23rd of this month, so I think that's next Monday, February 23rd at 2 o'clock. This is in Salina, Kansas, on 300 West Ash, and that's where the courthouse is. Once again, that's 300 West Ash, Salina, Kansas, at 2 o'clock on the 23rd for John. And there's some really, really, really fascinating and scary stuff going on in Salina, including sheriff's deputies making gangland and Illuminati signs with their hands for pictures that got run in the newspaper. I kid you not. And so this is, if you want to see an interesting, get to help John, please. So I wanted to get that out there, and I don't think I'll get to do it next Monday because I think his appearance is on next Monday afternoon. So anyway, that's a rallying call to anybody in that area to get to help him. The second thing is, if anybody's looking for information on government officials, a really good resource is go online, and I think almost every telephone book is printed online for every community, every county, every phone district. And in the front of almost every phone book, I know we have it here in New York, and I think most states do have it, is what we call the blue pages or the government pages. And in those front pages, I mean, here in Rochester, we have the names of the sheriffs, all the judges, their clerk's phone number. So just by pulling up online the phone book for whatever area, you know, you can do this from out of state. So it's a nice way to fill in some gaps for people who want to volunteer their time. Call Gary, get an area from him designated to you that's a little soft and we need some help. and then go online and start pulling up the government blue pages in the phone book for that area, and you should be able to get, you know, enough information where you at least may just have to make a few phone calls to get a fax number. Sometimes they don't always list the fax number in the phone book, but they'll give you the number to the judge's clerk, and most often they answer and just say, hey, can I get the judge's fax number and an address? Boom, boom, boom. Take about 30 seconds per call. And so, you know, there's a solution, quick way to get some information if you're coming up dry elsewhere. I'll yield back to you, Gerard, and unless anybody has any questions, I'll go on mute.
Yeah, before we do that, just to let people know that Eric is heading up under our groups, he's heading up the courtroom observers group. And if you go to the courtroom, if you need to talk with Eric by email or phone, go to Highlight Groups, go to Courtroom Observers Group, click on that, then click on Read First. And in that area, you'll find contact information to get a hold of Eric. There's his email address, eric@nationallibertyalliance.org, and his phone number is up there also. And if you want to get more information on those different things that are coming up, or you have something you want to get involved with, definitely everyone should join this group. Look, when you join National Liberty Alliance, of course, you joined as a member of the entire national movement. But within our groups, we have each state has their own group area, so you should be involved in your own group area. And we also have another tab up there in the top right that's called Groups. And right now, we have two different groups. One is the Media Campaign Group, and that is run by Sheila. Her information is on that page. And the Courtroom Observers Group, that's run by Eric. And we will probably be posting up into this area here also another group, which will be the committee for writing these letters and different information. We'll probably post them here under as a group and give them a group page maybe even. And also we'll be posting the fruits of their work under media that's being filed under court filing. So, you know, those are the areas to be going to for that information and for those contacts. Okay,
hey, John, one last thing. I wanted to remind people that if you do, you need to log if you're coming, you know, into this cold, like say you're not a member of the NLA yet and you're going to that website to check out the Court of Observers. You do have to join the National Liberty Alliance and then log in to view the request form. So if you need observers for a case that you're going through and you want to fill out a request form, we have that, but you have to log in to get it. So do join the National Liberty Alliance and then log in, and you'll be able to see some of the benefits that we offer with the Courtroom Observers, which is a request form that you can fill out, and we'll assist you in getting observers there. Now, criminal cases and people who are losing their homes, go at the top of the line. If you're in a custody battle, I'll help you out, but the people who are about to go homeless because the government's stealing their house, we had a couple situations like that up here in New York. We put that, we had a significant victory because of the Courtroom Observers we had there shining light on the fact that it looked like the buyer who was representing Bank of America was actually a sitting judge in overalls and suspenders trying to look like a regular person. It's absolute corruption. And so we had a victory there with the matter getting dished off to Fannie Mae and no word from the new, quote, buyer, supposed buyer. So the Courtroom Observers do work. They do get you victories if you have if you have a tough case. Sometimes you will win that case, and the only thing that will win it, even if you have a good common law case, will be Courtroom Observers there. The eye of the public, the public pressure, the cameras in the courtrooms. We have information up on the site on how to get cameras in the courtroom. They make you jump through a couple of hoops with a brief letter. I'll help you write that, and you can get your cameras in, and that really puts them on edge when the corruption is being documented. So with that, I'll yield back to you. Don't forget about John in Kansas. I'll be posting a request for him. Because he's really getting it from the county commissioners in Saline County, Kansas, and what's going on there is really scary. So please help him out, get involved with the Courtroom Observers, join the National Liberty Alliance, log in, become a Courtroom Observer, because that's where the rubber meets the road. We need activism as well as enlightenment, and I'll yield back to you, John and Gerard.
All right, thanks, Eric. Okay, you got 22 minutes, Gerard. It looks like you have four more callers, but go right ahead.
Got Gloria from Pennsylvania. You're on, Gloria.
Yeah, about the sheriff, I believe every office actually dictated by the attorney, So if you're sending document to sheriff, if document goes to sheriff, then we are lucky. Sometimes when you send the documents to judge, for instance, it goes to the court administrator's hand first.
Well,
so
that, you know, Gloria,
that's
a good point, Gloria, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I think we need to put a line or two on the front page concerning that problem, that this is the business of the elected officials and not bar attorneys to represent them, because we don't talk through filters. But we have to make it much more clearer that they're going to be responsible for this. The sheriff better be reading this, and it's the responsibility of that lawyer, if he takes it, to go back to the sheriff and say, he better read it.
So you may want to give a notice to the American Bar Association and also major American Bar Associations. Also, each counties have the Bar Association.
We'll take that into consideration.
Sure.
I don't know whether we want to communicate with those people. We got a lot of communicating to do as it is, and to go to the Bar Association.
The thing is, they are the ones who are actually opening the documents.
I think a letter, a line on the front page. As a matter of fact, I think we do have something that's pretty important that lays out to the sheriff, this is for you. You need to interpret it. Don't go to a lawyer. We'll make sure that that's fortified. It's a good point. We appreciate that.
The attorney will open the document and may not even hand it to the sheriff. So you may want to give a notice to the bar attorney. Make sure.
Well, that's why. Listen, I understand that, but they're not going to listen anyway. We'll put it on the front page, and if it gets to the lawyer, they should understand.
No, actually,
they don't
it
do their
works.
Job. That's
it works,
job.
John. I tried that.
Okay,
I tried
Gloria,
that and
Gloria,
it works.
Gloria.
I gave the notice to the blessed court administrator, and I sent it to the judge.
Okay,
they were
Gloria,
actually interfering.
I understand what you're saying. If you want to go out and gather all that information and get it to us so that we can send it out, that's fine, because we're having enough problems just to get it to the people we need to get it to. But we also, to send a hard copy costs a lot of money, okay? And there's only so many we can do. There's only so many hours.
No. All you have to do is just give a notice to the American Bar Association. That's all. Okay,
well,
make sure
that
these documents.
Well, if that's all it is, you're thinking on the national level only?
No, yeah. Once it's a national level, then make sure that attorneys
something.
Are not interfered.
Why don't you propose something in writing which you think might work and get it to me and Gerard, and let's look at it and think about it and talk about it?
No, because my experience, I send documents to the judge. Sometimes it doesn't even go to them.
Right.
It goes
but
to the court administrator.
Did you hear what I said, though? Did you hear what I said?
Uh-huh.
Gloria, did you hear what I said?
Yeah. I just
if
want you to understand
something,
that's all.
If you could draft something on our behalf, what you think it should say and where it should go, and then get that copy to Gerard and me, and then let's talk about it. Because if it's
just an idea, okay, and do you guys want to draft something, go ahead, because I'm not really.
What we're trying to do is give out work to other people to help us, because we can't keep up on it. That's good. This idea.
Yeah, so then
good
you
idea.
Dictate whoever should write this letter.
I was dictating
I'm not good.
To you.
Yeah, I'm not good at it. I'm just giving you an idea.
Well, if there's anyone out there that thinks they can write something,
I just want to make sure that our document goes to sheriff.
Okay. If there's anyone out there that wants to try to put together a paper, if they think they understand on how they might be able to frame this out, and
because I'm trying to share with you an experience that I tried it as a standard document.
I understand, but I'm also looking for. Gloria, I'm looking
sometimes
for help.
Sometimes it goes to a different hand, and it will never deliver to the right party. That's all, okay?
I hear what you're saying. It's a good idea. I'm not debating
I'm just,
that.
Hold
on a second, Gloria. Hold on a second. We have to digest this, and we want other people to hear both sides of what the conversation here. Look, I agree with what you're saying. If we don't have to send it to a lot of people, and we can send it just to the American Bar Association as a blanket thing, I think it's a good idea. It's well worth the investment of that one. We do need someone to write the idea up, and we'll work with it from there. Why don't we throw that to the committee, Gerard? See if they can come up with something on that. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, let the committee work on that. And look, we need more help with the committee. People should get into dialogue, and let's see if you have the ability to get involved with this stuff and help to write.
How about a little sticker you put on there that says, "Attention, attorney, this is only for the judge, and you need to send it over there or you're going to be in trouble."
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have that on the paperwork already. Take the next call. I'm going to go look, and I'll pipe in.
Okay.
If I find
yeah, that it. Way when they open it up,
all
they
right,
see
so,
it.
Okay, and about the constable, basically, when you want to research this, look into Black's Law Dictionary, but also Bouvier and Ballantyne Dictionary. You got to look at all the dictionaries, and what he says is actually they are a peace officer, and
right.
also they work with the Justice of a Peace. Actually, and he mentioned also work right underneath a magistrate judge. Okay, so you want to look into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you're talking about the International Bill of Exchange, It's all related to the UCC law, okay? And basically there are people actually being... you know, fraud by the banks. They are releasing funds, let's say like IRS cases or... so basically what it says is UCC 9-104. Basically, not 104. Hold on a second. It's 9-342. Actually, the bank cannot release the fund without customer's consent. So I just want people to know that. So
that's
they
can secure. Interesting, right?
Okay, we appreciate that.
Yep.
All right, let's move on
all
because
right.
you got five callers now, and we only
yeah.
got like 15 minutes left. But before we do that, let me just respond real quick. We do have something in here on our file on demand. We do have, and it's highlighted and bolded, underlined, and it says, any attempt by any clerk, attorney, or officer of any court or agency to intercept, divert, misfile, conceal, destroy, or mutilate this document, I should put to the person who's intended for. I'll get something
right.
like that in there. Thereby preventing the filing and serving of this document upon the recipients will be prosecuted for aiding and abetting the enemy. Now, on the front page of every paper, we have a about 8 lines that's on everything right above the title. In this case, it's mandamus to the county sheriffs to inform and to, for immediate action. And this is highlighted also, and it's 18 U.S. Code 2385, warning all in caps. Do not seek an attorney's interpretation that is not responsible for the oath you took concerning this information, ignorance of the law, or excuses that you were acting under advice of legal counsel will not be an acceptable excuse, for there is nothing to interpret. So I think that might be sufficient. I'll just put maybe another word or two on the file on demand page, and I think that should fortify it enough. But
right.
let me send it back to you. We're down to 18 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Gloria. Appreciate it. Okay. Terry from Colorado, you're open. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead. Try again.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I just wanted to ask one question. I'm still a little scary here. I'm still getting started. I finished my basic course today. And I just was thinking about, it looked like you've been working in New York a lot longer. Have you had any success with things that you've been doing in New York? I assume that they're further along, but are they? And so if you could just tell me how it's going in New York, I would appreciate it.
Well, look, New York is not any further ahead as far as the nation goes because all the papers are getting filed as per 50 states. You know, the ultimate goal is to end up in the courts, you know, and so we're filing on all levels. And where that happens first, we don't know, or how that happens. It could happen in one of the lower courts, or it could happen up on top. I mean, we've set, you know, we've been in the courts here longer, and anything that we would call a success in the courts was only our own personal stuff, you know, just from knowing the common law and frustrating them and they release you. We consider that a success, and we've had many people, like Eric said, with the court watchers thing. That's about the most success you can get today with these. Look, there's so much corruption. They're so evil. And they don't, and even if you're going to win, they won't let you win on the record. They'll take you out on the front steps and give you a deal and get rid of you. You know what I mean? And They won't let it go on the record, and we've had people that's happened to, you know, or they get something to hang their hat on to dismiss it. And so, until the grand jury actually gets into court, there's no success. And all we need is to get into one court, it's all over. It's the domino effect. They can't put a common law grand jury in one court and think that it's not going to go all over the nation because that grand jury will facilitate taking care of every other county, and it will move out. You know what I mean? So once we get our foot in the door and we get our seat in the court and we're operating as a common law grand jury, it's game over. And so it's going to happen fast when it happens, you know, and this whole, excuse me, this whole document thing that we're doing is designed. It's like we got their arm behind their back and we're ratcheting it up and ratcheting it up, and each one builds on the next one. And there is a plan there, and there is a climax there too, because, you know, it's a common law process that we're using. The old cor wanto and the mandamus and the notice and your notice and demand type stuff. That's all a process, and they can't deny the process and the procedure. And that's what we're holding their feet to the fire with. You know, when you put a paper onto that conveyor belt, like John likes to say, it has to move through. Well, guess what? Our paperwork has to move through. And what we're doing is, as we also know, one of the first things they taught us, and I'll get off in a minute, is that they expunge the record. They send stuff back. So part of our strategy is to put this all over the place so that nobody can pull it out and say they didn't get it or whatever. You know, it becomes ridiculous when it's going into 50 states. So that the success that we're having or that we're going to have is if everybody hits them with each one of these I don't even want to say their letters, their documents, their mandamuses, their cor wantos, their memorandums. Each one of those is going to bring us to the victory, and that's what we're aiming for, and that is the plan to march them forward. So,
okay.
as they go out, that's the success. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. I got Gary in Michigan. Are you
Hello?
There? Yes.
Hello.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, this is Gary down in Michigan. On the constable thing, I'm old enough to go back in time. We had a constable in our township when I grew up, and I grew up in St. Clair County, which is a about 60 miles north of Detroit.
I didn't want to say anything, but so did I. But go ahead.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Well, that's about all I had. We had a constable, and I think there was also a justice of the peace in the township. We were a rural township, but a little bit of the city of Port Huron had moved out to the township. And, of course, now it's really all the township is almost like the city. There are some farms left.
Right.
But I can remember having a constable, and he carried a gun.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a justice of the peace.
They're not as popular as they used to be, but I'll tell you, when we were, I think a constable can also witness papers just like a notary. Because we had one that was notarizing the signatures, I believe, when we were constituting counties, and that's one of the things they can do. But they're not too popular, and I don't know. They're probably a good thing to have. They're local. Our constable was more like Barney Fife. He was usually ran around doing stupid stuff. But I don't wanna, anyway, I won't get into that. But I got stories about me and my brother and the constable. You know,
yeah.
Kind of funny. But anyway, thanks for that.
Well, it kept the honest people honest, is what it did.
Yes, exactly. Right.
But I really want to appreciate you guys. I listened. I joined a little bit ago, and I'm up in age, and I'll do whatever I can to help it out. I've been in the Patriot Movement for many, many years, and I see what you're doing is an absolute. I think the flack is coming from Patriots or for hire, and this would take some of their income away once this would become into the courts.
Absolutely.
And become live, and I believe
Absolutely.
It will come.
Yeah.
And I'm praying that for you guys and your health and your strength, and for those folks, and for Gary himself here in Michigan. I contact with him, and he's the one that signed me up. And looking forward to have some other folks, but I'll take enough time, and thank you very much. And we continue to you do an excellent job, and we thank you very much again. Bye-bye.
Thank you for all that. Thanks.
6 minutes.
Next question, Pennsylvania. Jan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the district coordinator for Region 1 and 2. And to finish up one of our states' mailing of the Quaranto, we would like to do part paper and part fax. So what we need is a cover sheet that shows that we're doing a U.S. Postal Service mailing to all except we want a fax to the United States Congress and the State Assembly and Senate. So we need either a doc, Word doc.
Yeah, what we're doing is we're going to be doing, I don't know if you're involved in the team that's going to be faxing. I'm going to do the emailing. I've got all the software. Once it's set up, it'll be easy for me and just have to put the necessary files in and click a few buttons. But we'll be doing all of the faxing and all of the emailing for every state across the whole nation, and we are developing each state is a front cover sheet is being created for each state with their address on it, their email address, their fax number, and their phone number, and so we'll set that out. Now, what's most important is to get the information, the fax numbers and the emails of every state. That's number one. But the other important thing, of course, is to make sure that every paper we send out, that we try to get every sheriff a hard copy. Even though we're going to email and fax every sheriff, every state should try to get the sheriff a hard copy of everything, because that's the guy that we're really trying to educate, him and the marshal. And we'll make sure that every marshal gets a hard copy from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which will list every state in the union with their address, their phone number, their fax number, and their email address, and so on. And we'll get more into that discussion on a state meeting. Maybe I should go to the next state meeting, or I'll talk with Gary to make sure that we're all on the same page on that, okay?
Okay, we are planning to paper mail the sheriffs and the marshals.
Oh, yeah, that's the big one. And, yeah. And yeah, if the states want to send to the marshals also, they're going to get doubled, that's fine. If not, they're definitely going to get it from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and every state will be listed on that one. So that'll be hard copy.
But now this is for the Quaranto, and we would like to
this
fax.
This is for everything.
I know,
all...
but this is the old mailing, not a new one. This is the one from November. We
still have... okay, yeah. You have to finish up whatever you're doing, yeah. We're still going to send that Quaranto out again by email and fax. Yeah. Okay? That's going to happen. That's going to be the first thing. We got three papers. We'll probably get them out in 1 week. Within 1 week, we'll get three papers every 2 or 3 days. And then we'll continue maybe every 4 or 5 days a new paper. We've got 8 papers to file plus. And we're coming up with more, believe me. But the end game one is the most important. What we're doing is educating. Everything between now and the end game one is an education.
Yep, but to do that, we need a new cover page to show that we're faxing part of this.
Let's discuss that on a state meeting, because we got 3 minutes left, and I want to get off the mic. Gerard, you got 3 minutes left. Let's talk on a more. Matter of fact, you, Gary, and me should probably get together and talk.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay.
Thanks. Yep. Great. Thanks.
Thanks, Jan.
Yep.
I'm 3 minutes. The music's coming in. We're ending. So just to know.
Okay. I got Johnny R. I think you were in here once before, USMC.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. I had to do some fiddling here, but I got it to work.
Wow, that's so much better. Good. Go ahead.
All right. So anyway, I just sent you a Directive 14 from 2011.
Okay.
If you'll bundle that with the other one, you'll find out in there that the attorney had filed with the district in D.C. a complaint and has paperwork there for treason, because the courts in Missouri have been using Directive 14 on everything.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, I sent that to John and Sheila and Don and Gary. So if you don't have it, somebody can forward that to you.
Yeah, send one to Gerard at National Liberty Alliance, but I'll probably get it and I'll send it to him. Okay.
Secondly, I've got two pieces of software I wrote to help us speed things up. Real quick, the first one is going to be a program that puts out NLA Investigations.
And 1 minute. Can you call us tomorrow, 845-233-6560, or the next day we'll talk?
Sure. Can you give me that number again?
845-233-6560. 1 minute left. Let's talk. Let's go. We got one more minute. Let's see who else we can get on. And you, Johnny, you and myself and a few others will try to get together and talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff here that I don't want to talk about on the radio anyway.
Okay, sounds good. 1 minute left, Gerard.
Okay, let's go. Go ahead, Donald.
Yeah, I'm on the committee. What Gloria brought up earlier about Pennsylvania, we already received a few letters on that, and we're working on that. So just, Gloria, can rest at ease that we're already
30 seconds.
Okay, good. That's good. That's what I like to see, a little proactiveness there. So,
all right.
Very good.
10 seconds.
Okay. 10. Go ahead. Donald, Oregon, what could you say in 3 seconds?
Yeah. This is the 18 U.S. that John rattled off for about the send out to the 8th day.